The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning. The Bahamian economy growing by 3.8%, the largest the Bahamian economy has ever been. Al-Qaeda says the government's on track to meet the budget surplus. Men who traveled from the Democratic Republic of Congo still in isolation. And an 8-year-old boy shot in Bimini. It's all straight ahead this morning. I'm Dwight Strawn, and this is Morning Blend.
Wake up, it's a new day. It's the start of the start of a new way. Got to know that it's the start of the end of the old way. Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day.
Good morning again, Bahamas. It is Tuesday, May 26th, 2026. This is Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Again, I'm Dwight Strawn. In a moment, Duquesa Dean will be joining us. Also this morning, we'll meet the new Bahamas Primary School Student of the Year. And later in business, our monthly spotlight on the Orange Economy series. Today, we're talking about funding. Funding available in the region for Orange Economy products and projects. It's all straight ahead on this busy Tuesday morning. But first, it's time for the overnight, the latest breaking news from while you're sleeping and the top national and international headlines this morning. In the overnight, an 8-year-old boy had to be airlifted to the U.S. for emergency medical treatment after he was shot on Saturday night in Bimini. Police say that just after 9 p.m., they received information from medical personnel at the Bimini Community Clinic that a boy had been brought in with gunshot wounds above his left eyebrow and to the rear of his head. The attending physician advised police that the child's injuries were serious and arrangements had to be made to airlift him to the U.S. for further medical treatment. Shortly after midnight, the child was airlifted from North Bimini to Fort Lauderdale for urgent medical care. The boy's condition remains unknown, but said, again, to have been very serious at the time. So according to police, preliminary investigations revealed that the victim and his 12-year-old brother were inside a hotel room. And when the 12-year-old was later handed over to police by his uncle, police say a team of officers from Grand Bahama had to be dispatched to assist with the ongoing inquiries. On Monday, National Security Minister Miles LaRota confirmed that officials are waiting for police to wrap up the investigation before determining if the boy's parents could face charges. On Sunday, Bimini and the Barrier Islands MP Randy Roll released a statement extending prayers to the young victim and his family. Roll said he was deeply saddened by the news. A man was shot and killed on Friday after he visited a soccer field on Collins Avenue to purchase a cell phone. Police say officers responded to reports of gunshots in the vicinity of a public school in the area shortly before 7:45 p.m. Police also received an anonymous call from this around the same time reporting that a man was shot on the school grounds and needed immediate assistance. Responding to the scene, officers found an unresponsive man suffering from gunshot wounds to the left side of his upper torso. He was confirmed dead at the scene. Initial investigations revealed that the victim had gone to the field adjacent to the school to purchase a cell phone advertised online, and while at the location, he was approached by an unknown man who opened fire. Several shots were discharged, and in an attempt to escape, the victim jumped over a wall where he collapsed on school property. The suspect fled the area in a blue Suzuki Swift. Police in Grand Bahama launching an investigation after a woman's body was found in bushes. This was Sunday. Shortly after 3 p.m., officers conducted a search in a bushy area north of Custard Apple Street using an aerial drone. During the search, they detected a figure that looked like a body. Officers discovered the unresponsive woman lying face down wearing a multicolored floral dress. Police say there were no signs of life. According to EMS, the woman's body was transported to a hospital where an attending physician had pronounced her dead. Two men who recently spent 3 weeks in the Democratic Republic of Congo and traveled to the Bahamas from the United Kingdom have been placed in isolation at Lyndon Pindling International Airport. There's currently an outbreak of Ebola in the DRC. The men had fevers, which subsequently subsided, according to officials. As of Sunday, the men were transported to the modular unit of Princess Margaret Hospital and continue to undergo monitoring procedures. According to the Ministry of Health, men who traveled on a flight originating in the United Kingdom on Friday, May 22nd, had a recent history of travel to the DRC. At this time, they do not present any symptoms consistent with Ebola. The statement says that the public is reminded that the risk to everyone remains low and that there are no confirmed cases of Ebola in the Bahamas. During a press conference at LPIA on Friday, health officials said the British Airways flight had 218 passengers and crew. Besides the two men, the remaining 216 passengers and crew, who health officials said had no symptoms, were released. The director of the National HIV/AIDS and Infectious Disease Program, Dr. Nakia Forbes, said the passengers and crew were screened before they were released. Acting Chief Medical Officer Dr. Gillian Bartlett said the two men only exhibited fever symptoms. Police investigating a drowning in North Eleuthera. A suspected drowning after a 62-year-old man was discovered lifeless in waters near Lower Bogue. This was Sunday. The incident was reported shortly after 10 a.m. by a concerned resident. Officers responding to the scene found the man face down in the water. A local doctor declared the man dead. From the courts, a man allegedly broke into his ex-girlfriend's home and raped her in front of their son. A Supreme Court jury hearing this last week, the man's name has been withheld to conceal the identity of his alleged victim. He has denied the allegation at his trial before Justice Wilhelmina Archer Mins. The woman, in her 30s, tearfully recalled the alleged sexual assault. During her testimony, the woman alleged that the man broke into her apartment while she was in bed with their 7-year-old son. He allegedly violated her, and when their son awoke, he told him to go into another room. Under cross-examination, the woman denied that she made up the rape allegations to get back at her ex because he was seeing someone else. A 43-year-old Haitian woman has denied obtaining citizenship and other documents through fraud. Jane Doe allegedly obtained a Bahamian passport in April 2024 in the name of Marie St. Cyr, 1 month after a woman with the same name died in Abaco. The deceased, who became a naturalized citizen in 2005, reportedly misplaced her passport and national insurance card before she died. The woman, who allegedly assumed St. Cyr's identity, was arrested at immigration headquarters on May 13th, while checking on the status of her daughter's citizenship application. The woman is accused of obtaining work permits, a Bahamian passport, NIB card, and a naturalization certificate by fraud. She's also accused of possession of false passports and NIB cards, The accused was denied bail at her arraignment before Senior Magistrate Raquel Wims on Friday. Her trial is scheduled for June 25th. And a 43-year-old woman arrested by police after she failed to declare $73,000 in cash at Lyndon Pindling International Airport. According to police, security at LPIA contacted police shortly after 6 a.m. after discovering a substantial amount of undeclared U.S. cash while searching a passenger's luggage. Upon arrival at the baggage inspection room, officers were shown a dark-colored suitcase bearing an airline flight number and the passenger's name, and found that the luggage was reportedly destined for Haiti. Within the bag was a yellow Robin Hood flower bag that contained several bundles of U.S. currency. During a thorough search of the bag, officers discovered a total of $73,774. Officials identified a female passenger who was then escorted to the baggage inspection room, where she acknowledged ownership of the suitcase. She was then arrested and cautioned. MPLP Chairman Fred Mitchell saying it was merely happenstance that the passengers of a plane that crashed on Election Day included party supporters and Jonathan Eric Gardner, who was traveling with $30,000 in cash and was subsequently charged in the U.S. with cocaine importation conspiracy. Mitchell saying in a voice note, quote, over the course of the story unfolding, it seems pretty clear it was just an accident, happenstance, and misadventure. That plane went down en route to Grand Bahama from Abaco, and the occupants were all rescued in American waters by the U.S. Coast Guard. F&M Chairman Dr. Dwayne Sands have been among those who have raised concern over the peculiar circumstances surrounding the incident. Mitchell, though, saying that their comments were fanciful and amounted to unfounded speculation. He said, quote, the speculations are fanciful and again are examples of people putting two and two together and making it five. Overseas, the U.S. military saying Monday that it carried out self-defense strikes in southern Iran, including on missile launch sites and boats placing mines, even as U.S. President Donald Trump said on social media that negotiations with Tehran were proceeding nicely. The strikes were done, according to Captain Tim Hawkins, the spokesperson for the U.S. Military Central Command, to protect troops from threats posed by Iranian forces. Further details were not immediately available, including more specifics on the threats from Iran and what this means for negotiations. There was no official response from Iran, which had sent its parliament speaker to Qatar for negotiations over the possible deal with the U.S. North Korea launching a close-range ballistic missile and other weapons towards the sea on Tuesday, days after the leaders of Russia and China voiced their opposition to Western pressures on North Korea. The missile, fired from a city near the north's west coast, flew about 50 miles, according to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. North Korea launched other kinds of projectiles, but South Korea didn't elaborate. South Korean media, citing the military, reported that other weapons systems mobilized included multiple rocket launch systems. The report said the simultaneous launches of different kinds of weapons were likely meant to test an ability to evade South Korean and U.S. defenses. South Korea's military said it closely monitors activities in North Korea. It said that South Korea, with a solid alliance with the U.S., maintains a readiness to repel any provocations by North Korea. And Pope Leo making an historic apology Monday for the Holy See's role in legitimizing slavery and for having failed to condemn it for centuries, calling the Vatican's record a wound in Christian memory. Past popes have apologized for Christians' involvement in the transatlantic slave trade, but no pope has ever publicly acknowledged, much less apologized for, the role that past popes played in giving European sovereigns explicit authority to subjugate and enslave infidels. History's first U.S.-born pope, whose family history includes both enslaved people and slave owners, delivered the apology in his first encyclical, which was released on Monday. The sweeping manifesto is about safeguarding humanity in an era of increasing reliance on artificial intelligence. Leo raised the slave trade in relation to what he called the new forms of slavery and colonialism that the digital revolution is fueling. Black American Catholics, activists, and scholars have long called for the Holy See to atone for its role in the colonial-era trade in human beings beyond generic apologies for the involvement of individual Christians.
Sports update.
In sports, for the second time in as many weeks, Bahamian hurdler Devon Charlton lowered her national record in the women's 100-meter hurdles, and Shawnee Miller-Weibo continued to blossom and reassert herself among the world's elite runners. Charlton, sensational, clocking a new national record of 12.37 seconds to finish third behind the top two women ever in that event at the Wanda Diamond League meet. In China Saturday, Charlton's training partner, Masai Russell of the United States, was just 0.02 of a second off the world record, running a new American record of 12.14 seconds for first place. And world record holder Toby Amusan of Nigeria settled for second in a season's best time of 12.28 seconds. Meanwhile, Shawnee Miller-Weibo finishing second in the women's 200 meters, running 22.04 seconds. And is still celebrating in New York City as Karl Anthony Towns had 19 points and 14 rebounds. OG Anunoby scored 17, and the New York Knicks routed the Cleveland Cavaliers 130-93 Monday night to complete a four-game sweep of the Eastern Conference Finals. They are advancing to the NBA Finals for the first time since 1999. Landry Shamet scored 16 off the bench, while Mikal Bridges and Jalen Brunson had 15 apiece for the Knicks, who became the fourth team to have an 11-game winning streak during their postseason run. The last to do it was Golden State, which had a 15-game run en route to its second title in three seasons in 2017. All but one of the Knicks' wins have been by double digits, with an average margin of 23.7 points. The Knicks pulling the startles with 7:47 remaining and a 35-point lead as their large contingents of fans loudly chanted, "Knicks in four." New York fans easily outnumbered Cleveland as diehard celebrity fans like Spike Lee and Tracy Morgan and Timothy Chalamet and his girlfriend Kylie Jenner made the trip. That's sports, and that's the overnight. Time for your first look at weather. First look at weather brought to you by Star General. We've got high pressure that will continue to dominate weather across the country today. In fact, we've got a gale warning in effect for the central and southeast Bahamas. And this is all contributing to moderate to gusty winds and rough seas that will continue through tomorrow, when a moist air mass will sustain some quick passing showers and possible thunderstorms over the area. More on that in a bit, but for today, we're looking at a high risk of dangerous rip currents along all East Coast and Atlantic exposed beaches, especially in the open waters of the central and southeast Bahamas. Ragged Island in particular needs to look out for this. Beachgoers and swimmers should avoid entering waters along all windward and Atlantic-exposed shorelines. In addition to that, we've got the heat and UV index to contend with. Everyone is being advised to remain hydrated, wear protective clothing and sunscreen, and seek shaded areas while outside during peak sunshine hours, as UV indices are expected to be in the very high range and heat indices can reach the upper 90s. So your forecast for today, most of the country looking at partly sunny conditions turning fair tonight with a 10 to 30% chance of quick passing showers. Winds southeasterly at 15 to 20 knots with higher gusts for the northern half of the country. The southern half of the country looking at easterly at 20 to 25 knots with gusts to near gale force. High temperatures today expected to be around 90 Fahrenheit, but the heat index will make it feel like it's as hot as 98 Fahrenheit. Overnight lows tonight getting down to the upper 70s, even the low 80s for some areas. That's your first look at weather this morning. We'll have an extended outlook coming up in just a bit. This weather check brought to you by Star General Insurance, made simple.
Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day.
It is time for a break, but when we come back, we're discussing the day's top stories right here on Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9, your home for fresh news and smart talk all day.
Of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
If you're done with gas prices burning a hole through your wallet, stop paying the price and start driving the solution. A BYD EV from Easy Car Sales comes with an 80% drop in your fuel costs. So wave goodbye to gas lines and charge while you sleep. For 8 years, drivers like you have been breaking up with the pump and waking up to freedom. It's more than a car. It's a new way to be. It's a BYD. From the one and only authorized dealer in the Bahamas. Visit easy242.com to learn more.
Wake up, it's a new day.
Looking to elevate your gadget game, or a tech trouble simply slowing you down? Escape to a world of innovation at Custom Computers, your go-to store for the latest cutting-edge tech. Whether you need to upgrade your life with the best from Apple and Windows, or your device needs a little TLC, the Custom Computers Know-How Store is the destination for unbeatable expertise and quality repairs. With two convenient locations, there's a Custom Computers near you on Patton Street in Palmdale and Cades Village, or call 396-1100.
We heard you. Due to the request for more time, the Tourism Development Corporation is extending the Student Innovation Pitch Competition. Final application deadline, May 23rd. Competition date, now June 6th at the Hallmark Convention Center. If you're ages 10 to 18 with a business idea, invention, or vision for the Bahamas, this is your moment. Green economy, blue economy, orange economy, up to $50,000 in grants up for grabs. Out Island youth, we need you in on this too. The Tourism Development Corporation wants to support you and our future.
Wake up, try to rest, roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. Name it, we can print it, still a score. Let Printmaster bring your masterpiece to life.
Here is the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
No one likes a fender bender.
Oh, man.
From a little scratch to a full mashup, NUA Insurance has got you covered with auto insurance tailored to fit your needs and budget.
for affordable rates with free on-site accident assistance. Visit us online or in branch and just ask us. NUA Insurance. Ask us because we've got you covered.
Every day in a busy world, we have to do so much. Bank of CIBC and get that personal touch. Share your ambitions, let us help your dreams come true. At CIBC, you're at the heart of all we do. We're on your side, we're listening, we know the way you feel. CIBC, ambitions made real.
Wendy's has brand new chicken tenders.
And they're everything you've been craving.
Crispy, juicy,
and seasoned
just right.
These tenders bring the flavor from the very first bite.
Chip them.
Dunk them.
Love them.
With sauces like sweet chili,
scorching hot,
ranch,
honey barbecue,
honey mustard,
and Wendy's signature sauce.
Grab them as a kid's meal.
Enjoy them on their own.
Or make it a combo
that hits the spot
every time.
For tenders you're gonna know by name,
it's gotta be Wendy's.
Every day in a busy world, we have to do so much. Bank of CIBC and get that personal touch. Share your ambitions, let us help your dreams come true. At CIBC, we're at the heart of all we do. We're on your side, we're listening, we know the way you feel. CIBC, ambitions made real.
At Star General, you can go gold. Comprehensive car insurance covers loss or damage from accidents, fire, theft, and third-party liability. But the gold package gives you increased coverage for rental car and windscreen, personal accident, medical benefits, deductible waiver, and 24-hour roadside assistance where available. Our Star General Gold package also gives you up to $2,500 for accidental damage to a rental car anywhere in the Bahamas. Go gold with Star General. Insurance made simple.
Wake up. It's a new day. Wake up. It's a new day. It's the start of a new way. You know that it's the start of the end of an old way. Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day.
Welcome back to Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. We are streaming live on GuardianTalkRadio.com and on the Guardian Radio app for smart devices. Also on your televisions on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 and BTC Flow Channel 612. You can tweet us at Morning Blend 969 or Facebook.com/Morning Blend 969. Text us on the Guardian Radio text line powered by BTC 422-4796. Standard text rate supply. Once again, I'm Dwight Strawn. Joining me now, Duquesa Dean. Duquesa, good morning.
Good morning, Dwight. Good morning, Bahamas.
Great to see you. Hope you had a wonderful holiday.
Nice, quiet, restful day.
Excellent, excellent.
Rather enjoyable. I was supposed to leave the house to go get Kong salad, but I didn't.
Oh, that wouldn't have been quiet if you'd done that.
Yeah, right.
Everybody had the same idea yesterday, it seems.
Yeah.
At the fish fry and Potter's Key and other places.
Oh, so, gee.
Yeah,
I'll get it today then.
Maybe it might be better. So I want to thank Chester Robarts for filling in last week. Here we go. Here we go again. Okay. So we've got a lot to talk about this Tuesday morning. We're going to meet the new Bahamas Primary School Student of the Year. And looking forward to that. And later in business, our spotlight on the Orange Economy series continues. And this time we're looking at funding available throughout the region for Orange Economy projects and a whole lot more. So we've got a lot to get to. But right now, let's talk about what else is in the news.
Thank you.
So, the quests have been off for a few days, so what did I miss? Anything new happening in the country? Anything? Did I miss any new developments?
Same old.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure.
I don't know. I mean, there's a cabinet.
Nothing's improved.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, nothing's improved.
There's a new cabinet. And pocket-sized.
It was a good fashionable day as well.
Mm-hmm. Is it a manageable size of the cabinet?
I wouldn't say manageable, but I know that we don't have a choice. It's kind of fat.
No. We certainly have a choice.
I feel that...
Kind of fat? You sure that's the right word?
Yeah, kind of. Being generous.
This is the largest ever in the history of the country.
Yeah.
And what do we get out of that?
Well, hopefully some innovation.
Okay.
Hopefully some...
You're trying to be positive. I should be positive, too. But that's hilarious.
No, but Dwight, it's now up to us to hold the cabinet members.
The public?
Yeah, it's up to the public. It's up to
who
us.
Who functions
now.
Under an environment of no freedom of information?
Yeah.
Okay.
To put a bit more fire to not be so passive, because I feel that we're really passive. I feel that people are afraid of speaking out because, of course, you know, there is the risk of being blacklisted or whatever happens when you speak out. So I just feel that we need to be more aware, more alert, and to expose more things. And additionally to that, though, I also would like for us as individuals to be better people. So what do I mean by that?
So all you're saying is impossibilities. That's what you're talking about this morning.
It's not impossible. Okay. It's about decisions. Let me give you an example. You know, we're talking about the cabinet. We're talking about breaking the law. So yesterday I went to the airport to pick up someone, and all along the no parking zone where people parked, right? I mean, there are signs that you drive into the airport. All the signs along the right side of the road say no parking. And there is like a line from the beginning to the end of people parked. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, where's the police? Why aren't they enforcing this? And then I was like, why does the police have to enforce this? Like, as a citizen, you know what the laws are. If you run a light,
so
you know.
So you're talking about by the U.S. arrivals section? Is that what you mean?
No, I'm talking about by the, when you go into
where
the airport,
waits
the departure, mm-hmm. right, where you wait. And there's a free waiting parking lots, right? It's not paved, but it's free.
Okay, so technically, I believe, when they say parking, as in don't leave your car unattended.
There's somebody
waiting in the car. So it's not technically parking.
No. Because it's also a lane when you're coming into the airport. So it creates congestion. And if your car is parked and turned off, if you're parked... But there is a free waiting lane, so I don't want to belinger that point. But if you run a light, right, as a citizen, that's mm-hmm. your choice, mm-hmm. right? If you commit a crime as a citizen, that's your choice. So we also have to do a better job of making better decisions to help our country be better. Small things that we can do. So
we want
to hold the leaders accountable, but we also have to hold ourselves accountable to uphold the law as well.
You can't be hypocrites.
Exactly. I mean, yes. We love existing in that zone.
Yeah.
Right. But
I hear you.
Definitely. But it was a beautiful. It was a beautiful day of fashion, and it was a beautiful party day.
If that's what's important to
you know,
you.
Not
sure.
to me.
Not to you, but I mean to one. To
I
one.
Mean. I guess it's a thing. Mm-hmm. I don't see the sense in it, but it's a thing.
Well, I heard a little bit from other people talking last week, so I won't belabor the point. But I'm glad that people brought it up, that especially in the Westminster system, you know, you do need an active backbench. Everybody mm-hmm. does not need to be in the cabinet. We keep doing this. In fact, I've said it before that we need to have a maximum number. I think the minimum is 9 or 10, but that should be the maximum, actually. Mm. 10 cabinet posts, and everybody else needs to be a backbencher.
So every government gets to decide how big their cabinet will be.
Yeah, and it's been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so nobody is left in the the dark, I guess. That's a weird
everyone
way to put it.
Everyone gets rewarded.
Yeah, everybody gets something. And this is not helpful or sensible. And it is the people suffering are the electorate, the people who put them there to represent us, right? If you're not in the cabinet, again, I have a major problem with this. We shouldn't pick our cabinet from the elected officials. So you run into many issues with this, but that's a whole other discussion. But we need to have an active backbench. And a way around this, again, pay them better. Mm-hmm. Pay the MPs better so they don't need to have a cabinet post be a parliamentary secretary or whatever it is.
I mean, because you're paying them anyway, right?
So pretty much.
Increase the salary.
Yeah. And let's have most of them be backbenchers or opposition.
And allow them to do the work.
Of the people.
Right.
Of the people. Mm-hmm. But again, that's up to us. We're going to have to stand up and call for this and scream and shout and not go there to watch and act like this is some prom and mm-hmm. cheer them on with their weird, stupid-looking fashions. we have to grow up. We have to grow up. But everybody here is looking for something from somebody.
Yes.
And so they won't speak out on this.
Exactly.
Because then I might not get that contract or get on that board or get something for me.
That's one category of people. And the other category of people is, what's the point in speaking out if nothing's going to change, right? What's
they the only say that until they get on a board or get a contract.
Well, true.
So I think it's only one category.
No, it's two categories. I'm going to stick with two categories. Okay. There's a category of people who, like, what am I going out to vote for? It's not going to make a difference. It's not going to change anything. It's just going to continue on the way that it is because they're looking for a savior. They're looking for somebody to rise up and... It's just not them. It's not. They're not supposed to, and so we're in this cycle.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk a lot more about that over the next few weeks. Why people are losing interest in voting, and what can be done to encourage them to get back into this type of participation in the development of our country. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So in the news, quite a lot to talk about this morning. The big headline in the NASA Guardian, economy grows by 3.8%, the largest the Bahamian economy has ever been. We're going to get into that in a bit. Is he saying it for this as in the fiscal year that's ending in a few weeks? Michael Halkidis, who is now the Minister of Finance, says the government's on track to meet the budget surplus. Huh. Okay. We're going to get into that in a few minutes, but there's some other stories that we need to touch on very, very briefly. So people are freaking out about this, as they should. Some travelers who have been in the Democratic Republic of Congo and arrived here on a British Airways flight are still in isolation. So our LaTanya Roberts writing about this. So two men who recently spent time in the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and traveled to the Bahamas from the United Kingdom, were placed in isolation at Lyndon Pinling International Airport on Friday, according to officials with the Ministry of Health. There's currently an outbreak of Ebola in the DRC. The men had fevers, which subsequently subsided, according to officials. As of Sunday, May 24th, the men were transported to the modular unit of Princess Margaret Hospital and continued to undergo monitoring procedures. So the ministry says was said in a statement on Sunday that the men who arrived on a flight originating in the United Kingdom on Friday, May 22nd, had a recent history of travel to the DRC. At this time, they do not present with any symptoms consistent with Ebola virus disease. The public is reminded that the risk to the public remains low and that there are no confirmed cases of Ebola in the Bahamas. During a press conference at LPIA on Friday, health officials said the British Airways flight had 218 passengers and crew. Besides the two men, the remaining 216 passengers and crew, who health officials said had no symptoms, were released.
Where they are?
The director of the National HIV and AIDS and Infectious Disease Program, Dr. Nakia Forbes, said the passengers and crew were screened before they were released. Acting Chief Medical Officer Dr. Gillian Bartlett said the two men only exhibited fever symptoms. Wow. One of the men is a British national who lives in Australia, and the other is a French national. After leaving the DRC, the men traveled to Ethiopia and other parts of Africa. While en route to the Bahamas, the men were flagged after presenting low-grade fevers of 101.5 degrees, wow, and 99 degrees.
And still got to travel?
So Bartlett said, quote, upon the flight's arrival in New Providence, the Ministry of Health and Wellness immediately implemented its health protocol, which included placing the two passengers in isolation. Subsequently, the other passengers and crew on board the flight were assessed. She said, further assessments will be managed according to the established national and international guidelines, and all relevant infection prevention and control measures are being implemented. No confirmed infections have been identified at this time. Based on the information currently provided to the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the risk to the public is low. The ministry will continue its monitoring and evaluation protocols and provide updates as needed. Well, Health Minister Dr. Michael Darvill said the government will discuss whether travel restrictions to countries like the DRC is necessary. Okay. Saying on Friday night, quote, it has been brought to our attention that the United States and other countries have put bans to countries like South Sudan, Uganda, and the DRC. It is a government decision. I have the Minister of Foreign Affairs here with me. We will be discussing measures, and we will be getting back to the media and the Bahamian people about our decision as it relates to a potential ban.
Potential ban.
Okay, that one seems like a no-brainer and pretty easy. And also, we need to encourage the Bahamian public to just not decide to go to those places that currently have an Ebola outbreak.
What are the rest of the passengers? Are we doing...
I don't know. I don't know if they were... Were they coming here? Were they passing through? I mean, who knows? But that they were released.
Were there Bahamians on the flight that stayed here? I mean, these are questions that you can't answer, obviously. No. But these are questions that are in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having a low-grade fever is frightening enough coming from a country that has Ebola. So are the people that stayed here asked to stay in quarantine for a certain period of time just for us to be certain?
Just the two with the symptoms.
Only them two. Even though we're on a plane with the air circulating and all of us are breathing in basically the same air.
Right.
No other person that came into the Bahamas that was staying here was asked to quarantine just as a precautionary measure.
They were... quote, assessed.
How were you assessed? And symptoms don't just show up today. Sometimes it takes a few days. Like, so who's following up with that?
Just pray. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Let's get your reaction to that quickly, folks. 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4259. Call us toll-free. 242-300-5720. Tweet us, Facebook us, text us. 422-4796, standard text rate supply. Again, even the two men are not exhibiting Ebola symptoms. You don't want to know. Mild fever. Well, okay. low grade fever. 101 is not low. But you know, hey, there are all kinds of illnesses around, right? So could be anything. But
Well, at least we're at the very least we're monitoring those.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Let's take this call and we'll get to some of your text messages. Good morning, caller, you're on the air. Hi, good morning, you're live. Are you there? Call us back. 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4259. Call us toll free. 242-300-5720. Let's get to these messages. Yeah, I was going to ask the question of that one too. Welcome back, Dwight. Still no word of that police shooting? Was that, how long ago was that now? Yeah, I guess we're not, forget about it.
I mean, the message is clear.
Don't be a Bahamian and encounter
the message is very, very clear.
Off-duty police officer. Don't tell them you're an American. Just say, hey, put on your best American accent and you might survive it. Or not, you're not, but at least there'll be justice. if you don't survive it. Right? Tell them that you're from Georgia or something. I don't know. They might think twice. But even if they don't, there'll be justice for you. Perhaps.
Wow.
Ah, good morning. Welcome back to White Missing Chester because he did an amazing job and didn't call us stupid.
Oh, you came up with the big guns.
Hope you were listening. Hooray, Guardian Radio. Well, I mean, that's a stupid text. But
you came up with all your guns this morning.
You know, as I keep telling you, don't do stupid things. Then you won't be called stupid.
Oh, wow. Four stupids in just one sentence.
Just in the first hour. right? Right?
Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Caller, good morning. You're live on the air.
Hey, good morning, Dwight, and good morning to your guest.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, I want the Bahamas to notice how reactive we always are to stuff. The Hunter virus and the Ebola virus, information of those has come out for a while now, and we see it can be as effective or more effective to the pandemic level. So whatever our health professionals have put in place, you notice nothing, actually. The lady in the press conference who represents the CDC or our head doctor person, she didn't do a good job in terms of satisfying the public for those who really wanted good answers. And also the press, the people in the media, they did a horrible job asking her questions because there's no protocol that was laid out say, we are willing to do A, B, C, or D for those passengers. No one asks why were those passengers sent to the Bahamas after where they're coming from, know that they come from high-risk Ebola outbreak areas. And yes, the full itinerary or whatever they call it of the flights, they all were sent here. So we can track every one of those passengers. We know where they were going. And again, why did the Bahamas allow those persons to even come off the flight or stay here to even quarantine? If they were not staying here, they should have just packed them up and say, on to your next destination. We need to stop taking on certain risks, especially to this magnitude. And again, we got to plan in advance. Dr. Davil, the Minister of Health, he should had already sit down with his team and said, what is the step in case if this go worldwide and this happened to come to our doors? And a scare, thank God, and I just hope that that's all it was, a scare that happened to wake us up early and nothing else happened because we got to stop being reactive. That's just my 5 cents to that.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Thank you very much. I don't know. Okay. I hear you. This person says here, I detest the fact that I'm hearing politicians should be paid more. Are you being sarcastic? Those same MPs who declare a certain amount of money before coming in and next cycle declare a 1,000% increase? No way. How about we slash a politician's salary in half? Then we'll really see who is in it for the people and put that funding somewhere where it actually matters to increase the teachers, nurses, and law enforcement salaries. / stop playing crackhead games. All right, so I just want you to think clearly about what you're saying and listen to what we said or what I said earlier, right? We cannot have everybody be in a cabinet or a cabinet adjacent position. That's exactly where you run into problems. But if you raise the base price for an MP, they might be more willing to not have to seek out a position in the cabinet or be a chairman or whatever it is, and can focus on representation for the people and address the issues that we need lawmakers to address, fixing our laws and putting in place better laws. But no, I didn't say cabinet ministers need to make more money. I didn't say that. I didn't say that. That's a totally different thing. But the MP salary is not very, very high.
It's not livable.
Sure. But we do need to take a critical look at everything we're doing here. It does not make sense to have 30 people in a cabinet or cabinet adjacent position.
Agree.
Look at what happens in the UK, how effective the backbench is, often more effective than the opposition. Mm-hmm. And when they speak, things happen. Yeah. The backbench, as in they are changing prime ministers frequently. Mm-hmm. There's a reason for that.
That answers all our questions. It's
you mess up, you got
to
go.
The freedom to do whatever you want to do.
Here, you mess up and you get people pounding on the table.
Yeah, freedom to do whatever you want to do without opposition.
So let's rethink what we're doing here if we must continue with this system. All right, so this is about the economy. We'll get to that in a bit. Let's take this call. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Morning, Dwight. I just thought I'd chime in on the whole Ebola situation. I think the Bahamas needs to be reminded that Ebola is spread primarily through direct physical contact, and it doesn't have the capacity to become COVID because it's not airborne. So you could be sitting across from someone on an airplane, and that person might have Ebola, and the chance of you contracting Ebola is less than 1%. Secondly of all, we don't have the privilege or the luxury to just implement, you know, blanket travel restrictions for a country whose economy depends on tourism. We don't have that luxury. So I think before Bahamians start calling for these things, they need to actually assess, you know, what the reality is that they would face should these measures be implemented. Because just like during COVID, when Dr. Minnis implemented all those COVID lockdowns and people got upset and the economy got messed up, should the government do something similar, why would we expect a different result? I think we just should be conscientious of how Ebola is actually spread.
Before you go.
And also be conscientious of the fact that we depend on tourist dollars.
Before you go, can you define personal contact? What does that look like? What does that mean?
According to this situation, Ebola is spread through direct personal contact.
Right.
Touching someone, touching a contaminated object, coming into contact with bodily fluids, those types of things. That's not happening on an aircraft. Well, at least it shouldn't be happening on
right.
aircraft.
Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be. Touching armchairs, touching food, what you call those things, trees. I mean, the risk may be minimum, but I don't want to say that it doesn't exist. But I hear you. Thank you for that.
No problem. My pleasure. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, Colin. Let's take some more text messages. This person says here, okay, what does that have to do with anything? Text. Oh, man. Okay. Okay, I don't think this is going to be helpful to continue with this. Oh, dear Lord.
Not day one. Y'all got to ease him back into it.
Ooh.
Not day one.
Wow. Okay. So we'll keep you posted on what's happening here with these two gentlemen, and we'll see what happens. All right. So this other story is unbelievable here, and the stories aren't clear as to whether these are Bahamians.
Right.
Are we to assume that these are Bahamians? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Little boy who was shot. Yeah. Boy 8 shot in Bimini. An 8-year-old boy was airlifted to the U.S. for emergency medical treatment after he was shot on Saturday night in Bimini. Police say that just after 9 p.m., they received information from medical personnel at the Bimini Community Clinic that a boy had been brought in with gunshot wounds above his left eyebrow, and to the rear of his head. That is not good. The attending physician advised police that the child's injuries were serious and arrangements were being made to airlift him to the U.S. for medical treatment. So shortly after 12 a.m., the child was airlifted from North Bimini to Fort Lauderdale for urgent medical care. His condition remains unknown at this time. So according to police, preliminary investigations revealed that the victim and his 12-year-old brother were inside a hotel room when the incident occurred, and the 12-year-old was later handed over to the police by his uncle. Police say a team of officers from Grand Bahama had been dispatched to assist with ongoing inquiries. On Monday, National Security Minister Miles LaRota confirmed that officials are waiting for police to wrap up the investigation before determining if the boy's parents could face charges. He said, quote, "We'll wait until the police have wrapped up their investigation before it's decided whether charges will be filed or not. We encourage adults, those who are in possession of licensed firearms, to make sure that all safety measures are taken into consideration, especially if they have young children around. If it was an unlicensed firearm, we discourage the public from being in possession of those." Really? Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. It's illegal for you to carry a firearm that's not licensed. The question, did you know? Did you know that? We definitely discourage the use of carrying unlicensed firearms.
Oh, for emphasis. Yeah, for emphasis.
Just in case you were unclear.
Right.
Like, people that like, what? I never knew. Oh, boy. Okay. Uh-huh. Oh, boy. Okay.
Oh, what is
so let's see. Let's see if there's any. So, this is the Tribune saying that National Security Minister Miles Lerota yesterday issued a strong appeal to licensed firearm owners to properly secure their weapons around children after an 8-year-old boy was seriously injured in a shooting incident in North Bimini on Saturday night. The child was reportedly inside a business establishment on Kings Highway when he was shot by his 12-year-old brother.
Wow.
Police were alerted to the incident shortly after 9 p.m. by healthcare workers at the Bimini Community Clinic. Medical staff told officers the child was brought in with apparent gunshot wounds above the left eyebrow into the left rear of the head. The physician described the boy's injuries as serious. He was later airlifted to Fort Lauderdale while his 12-year-old brother was turned over to authorities by his uncle and arrested in connection with the shooting. At last report, the boy was said to be in stable condition. When asked for more details about the shooting, Lerota only said the police investigations were ongoing. He added that investigators have still not determined whether charges will be filed.
Oh.
He said, quote, we encourage adults, those who are in possession of licensed firearms, to make sure that all safety measures are taken into consideration, especially if they have young children around. With regards to that being, if it was an unlicensed firearm, we discourage the public from being in possession of those. It's illegal for you to carry a firearm that's not licensed. And we definitely discourage the use of the carrying of unlicensed firearms. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That must be heartbreaking for the family. Right? Whether licensed or not, the child picked up a gun and shot another child.
I'm sure. Okay. This story is disturbing on a number of levels. Again, the kid's just around with the gun. We don't know. It's still, nobody's saying, I guess we're to assume their behaviors. Mm-hmm. Are we, I guess.
Or to assume. I mean, airlifted to the U.S. probably because of proximity. Because usually they would airlift to Nassau. So, I don't know. Or maybe that they may have dual citizenship or something, right? Because a lot of people in Bimini, I think, may have that.
Or to increase the likelihood that he could survive.
Yeah, so, wow, that's a telling statement in and of itself, right?
Yeah.
But
because it was a hotel, it's just so unclear. Yeah. I don't know why we don't have more clarity on that. That should be a given to know what we're dealing with here.
Where were the parents?
Just really, really bizarre. Really bizarre. Wow. Let's get your reaction to this, folks.
A horrible accident.
And the interesting comments from the minister, if you have a licensed firearm, make sure that if you have kids around, okay.
I think the minister was filling space because he said that statement 3 times. But I guess, you know, don't have illegal firearms. There's a strong message that should be sent. But it's a no-brainer that if you do have a firearm, whether licensed or not, it should not be accessible to children.
Yeah. Let's hear from you. 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4259. Tweet us, Facebook us, text us, 422-4796. Call us, get your reaction to that. Good morning. Hi, you got to have a little bit of patience with us, folks. Call us back. Again, 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4259. Someone says here, someone should be arrested unless it was, okay, well. You know, we got different rules here. Different rules here. If you're,
I mean, some adults should be being held for questioning, seriously, because the uncle turned the child in. Was he there with the uncle? Was he there with his parents? Like, what are the details? The uncle took him. They arrested the 12-year-old. But where's the guardian that should be under questioning too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Well, we do pray for that kid. We hope that he gets sorted
out. Both of them.
Yeah, sure.
Because that would, I'm sure, is traumatic for a 12-year-old to be arrested, to be at the jailhouse, to be held, to have shot his brother. I don't know what the thought process was. For a 12-year-old, this is not like a 6-year-old, but a 12-year-old should be some thought of consequences. Mm. But again, we send our thoughts.
Very close look needs to be taken with these parents, whoever are the guardians of these young boys. Something serious needs to be done here, without a doubt. Let's see what these callers are saying before we get to these messages. Good morning, caller. You're live.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, Mr. Strong, good morning, DeGresso.
Morning.
Hi.
I'm just hearing the story about the shooting, but I just wanted to make a quick comment and comment on what the caller, the previous caller was saying, and how the reporters and the media handled the situation with the Ebola virus, right? You know, firstly, he was correct as it relates to it's not airborne, but you must bear in mind biological weapons program, and you don't know if these species are being weaponized to be more virulent, et cetera, et cetera. Just open up our minds. And so also, I'm disturbed that, given the fact that if it's a clinical situation in which the men were held, then a PCR test, which would be more rapid and identify the viral loads quickly, and then you would also have the culture isolation that they could have set in motion to determine which medicine they would use or antibiotics or treatment, right? And so I'm afraid that they didn't provide that for the public. I know we are all dummies, right? But at least they could have said that the PCR test is negative, et cetera, et cetera, and they have collected blood samples to do a future culture isolation for future references because these patients might be ground zero. And the fact that they were running fevers shows that they were infected with something because fever is just a natural way for the body to try and kill off a virus or a pathogen. There's nothing really hard to understand about it, but the level of disrespect and the incompetency in reducing the public fears. And so while this gentleman might say it's not airborne, but let's bear in mind that it still lives in semen, it still lives in bodily fluids, and so it's hemorrhagic. And that simply means that then it attacks the cells are lysis, and it would burst and it would spread. So you see people bleeding from the ears and other places, but it's by no means harmless. That's what I'm saying. So for me, for what I know, the WHO has had many failures. I'm not going to put trust in the WHO because we saw what they did with the pandemic. They allowed it, and then they create worldwide fear, and then they introduce an economic situation in the country. And, you know, these things are really happening. The Marburg virus is called the Marburg virus because it actually escaped through some biohazard situation in Germany. So it's named after the town in Germany. Right. So if you go into these situations, you'll notice that most of these viruses for the past 40, 50 years started in isolated regions. It's all a part of their global experiment. And you have to open up your minds and educate the public, you know.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I guess you don't trust them, but the Ministry of Health is saying that these folks don't have any symptoms related to Ebola. So keeping our fingers crossed that a bullet was dodged. Okay, this text here, this person says, ignorance is not excusable. When traveling to another country with a gun, you should know that if it's permissible or not. Charge the parents and whoever let them. We don't know. We don't know if that is the situation. We don't know what it was.
Get that
here.
Information.
And nobody's saying anything. Okay. Don't they know if the firearm was licensed or unlicensed by now? How long does it take to determine that? If the gun was an illegal weapon, shouldn't he be charged with that? Just a matter of what's he going to be charged with?
We're talking about the minor here.
But everything. I agree with what the text is saying. Mm-hmm. This is. It's been days now. Come on.
Yeah. I'm sure they know by now. Maybe they
again, we
know
don't know what happened with the other police-involved shooting. Right, so, yeah, we may never. Then this is this. I don't know what's going on with the police force. This is ridiculous. And the Ministry of National Security is just as ridiculous. They keep doing this. There's no reason to allow people to stew in speculation. Just say, were these people Bahamians? What's going on here? Whose gun was that? Come on. But this must be fun for them. Must be fun. I don't get it. We don't have to be, it doesn't have to be like this.
Well, it's what we have accepted for so long.
No, no, no. I don't know who the we is, but this is not
people,
acceptable.
Like,
this is not. And we're going to continue to talk about them. Yes, you don't like me to call people stupid, but this is stupid. This is very stupid.
Who else is crying out for it? Who else is saying we need this information? Who else?
You have to know that if it happened in the hotel, people are going to speculate that these people might not
be
Bahamians.
Give you a thorough...
Say what this is.
I agree. You could say if they were local. You could say if they were tourists.
Boy. I don't get it. And then to... yeah, it feels like we're being played. They're playing with us. And it's very annoying. But we have to call them out. Call them out. This is not acceptable. This is not the type. This is not enough information. You're not answering the questions. Why are you taking so long?
You really want me to share?
I mean, that's not for you. I was asking them.
I know, but I mean, how do you protect people otherwise, Dwight?
Who are they trying to protect here?
We don't know who the person is. It could be... a supporter, it could be a celebrity, it could be exactly. Mm-hmm. So the more vague it is, the more opportunity to help that person not get severely punished.
So in trying to be vague, you will get yourself into problems by saying it's illegal for you to carry a firearm that's not licensed.
You're not
Because you don't want to say the truth. You're going to say something ridiculous like that?
They have to put a story together first. Or maybe the minister just did not have enough facts at that particular point in time.
Okay. Well, see, maybe, you're not going to catch me like that.
Exactly. Maybe
everyone's
he didn't
ask me
know
questions.
The questions
you all need
ask.
To tell me what's going on.
Yeah, maybe he didn't know the questions
I'm sure he knows
to ask.
Questions
of
to ask.
The, I
mean, I'm sure he knows the questions
now,
to ask.
Now, Dwight, I'm going to give the minister a break because this is what? First week as the Minister of Security, so I would give him a break. Perhaps someone
Government
who is guiding him should have a format of
information
should be
the
included
same
in their statements.
Nope.
So that when their
did the police force
speakers,
change? Do they have new
that's
management?
That's my whole point. Maybe he is. Maybe they need a standard for when information is provided, mm-hmm. what all should be included in this information to give to the minister to speak on, right?
No, we don't want them to decide.
Or he, because he wasn't there. Like, where does he get the information
from? The police
from?
Force has a standard, and it's below standard. They never give the right information.
Exactly.
We don't want them to determine
so
the standard.
So we need a standard. We need
let me do it. How about that? I'll tell you.
So I don't
this
want
is
them
what
to
we
hire
need.
You as a consultant.
No, no, no. I don't want to be. I don't want to work
because
with that.
Because then you. Won't
I'm just
going to
give them the list.
This.
I'll do this for free. When this happens, and
right,
who are these people?
Right.
Are they Bahamians? Are they Americans?
Right.
Which hotel? Why can't you say?
Yes,
what's the problem?
That might be helpful. Seriously, I'm being very serious. That might be helpful to every minister to have. Like, okay, this is the information that I will need to speak.
Yeah.
Competently on this matter. Otherwise, I'm going to repeat sentences like something is illegal that we know is illegal to fill space.
Guns
so,
are dangerous.
No, so give me sufficient information so that I could give a proper statement on this. Mm. And then processing mine from a minister's perspective now should be, there's some information missing. What else should I be asking for here? What else do I need to know to go to the public with? So it's not all on the police. It's also a part of their responsibility to say, okay, there are some gaps here that need to be filled. Before I go to the public, what else do I need? And that's where they should be processing. But we know.
Oh, I'm sure they know, but they just don't. They just don't do it. Why? Why? Caller, what say you? Good morning. Are you there?
As you said, Kasai Station. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you very much.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I am calling in regarding the shooting in a different light. That is the anger that is in the children. There's a lot of anger in children, and there's lethal anger in children. Children trying to choke each other to kill. Children are into the death situation. And so there's a lot to be done. Parenting, education, the tools that are available to children online, all these reels and all these craziness that they're consuming, is showing them one alternative. Does anybody mess with you? Get them out of your way. And our world has gone a far way, and there's a lot to be done to reverse it.
I hear you. Okay, interesting.
I also want to say that we shouldn't actually have to wait on the ultimate authority, meaning the head of the department, that is the minister, to be able to give us specific and clarify information. You need to come from different at the level of input. So it should come from the ground out, and so the clarity and the transparency is done instantly. Because once it's truth has nothing to hide. Truth has nothing to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think we've been saying the same thing. Thank you very much. Thank you for anger in children. I think a lot of children are displaying what they see.
And from different, it could be from the home.
From the home.
TV.
Movies, TV.
Exactly. And I know you have a different view on gaming. I think if you are not mature enough in knowing fantasy from reality, like, you could want to see how this works yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Especially.
No, I agree.
You know?
What's my different view?
Oh, I thought you were like a gamer.
Oh, no. It's encouraging a lot of violent behavior.
It is.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's ever changed. I think children have always been like that. But again, if you don't have adults around who tell you,
correct,
you can't do that, you
right,
need to ease up,
I
this,
do.
Right.
Right.
You will grow into an adult. Who's strangling people for no reason on the side of the street. Wow. We're going to pick this up on the other side of the news. This is Morning Blend on a Tuesday morning here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back to Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. We are streaming live on GuardianTalkRadio.com and on the Guardian Radio app for smart devices. Also on your televisions on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 and BTC Flow Channel 612. You can tweet us at Morning Blend 969 or Facebook.com/MorningBlend969. Text us on the Guardian Radio text line powered by BTC. 422-4796. Standard text rate supply. And now at 8:18, it's time for another check of your weather for today, brought to you by Sherwin-Williams. So we've got a near gale warning in effect for the central and southeast Bahamas. The high pressure that is dominating weather across the country will continue through tonight as it pushes southeastwards across the country, but moderate to strong gusty winds and rough seas will continue till at least tomorrow, when a moist air mass will sustain some quick passing showers of possible thunderstorms over the islands. So again, that high pressure is going to dominate weather across the country, bringing passing showers and strong winds through to the middle of the week tomorrow. Winds will gradually decrease from Wednesday as the ridge weakens, leading to light to moderate breezes for the rest of the week. By late Thursday into Friday, moisture from a tropical wave moving out of the Caribbean will increase cloudiness, humidity, showers, and thunderstorm activity, mainly for the northern and northwest Bahamas. An area of low pressure from the Gulf will increase the potential for severe weather by Sunday. For today, though, a high risk of dangerous rip currents continues across east and east coast and Atlantic exposed beaches, especially for the central and southeast Bahamas, including the waters near Ragged Island and the Old Bahama Channel. Beachgoers and swimmers should avoid entering water along windward and Atlantic exposed shorelines. And we'll have to contend with the heat and UV index as well. Residents across the country advised to remain hydrated and limit outdoor activities, as UV indices are expected to be in the very high range and heat indices in the upper 90s. So your forecast for today, most areas looking at partly sunny conditions, turning fair tonight with a 10 to 30% chance of quick passing showers. For the central southeast Bahamas, again, winds gusting to near gale force. High temperatures looking at around 90 Fahrenheit, 32 Celsius for the heat index will make it feel like it's as hot as 98 Fahrenheit, 37 Celsius today. Overnight lows snagging down to the upper 70s for the northern half of the country, low 80s for the central and southeast Bahamas. In your extended outlook for tomorrow, Wednesday, we've got a mix of sun and clouds turning partly cloudy at night, a 20 to 30% chance for showers for most areas. By Thursday, partly cloudy for most areas, a 20 to 30% chance of showers with possible thunderstorms. Changes coming by Friday, partly cloudy to cloudy with some overcast periods for the northern half of the country, a mix of sun and clouds elsewhere, with a 20 to 40% chance of showers with thunderstorms for the northern half of the country. That pattern will hold for Saturday with an even increase in chance of showers and thunderstorms up to 50% by then. And even worse conditions on Sunday, partly cloudy to overcast with an 50 to 80% chance of showers with thunderstorms for most of the country. That's your Morning Blend weather check, brought to you by Sherwin-Williams. If you're looking to paint, Sherwin-Williams has what you're looking for: top quality paints, expert advice and tips to help you save, only at Sherwin-Williams. Time for a check of traffic brought to you by NUA Insurance. We've got, as usual, Milo Butler Highway, your hot spot, with some slow-moving northbound traffic north of Fire Trail straight up to Tawny Goldings Darling Highway in the northbound lanes there. Some traffic backed up along Tawny Goldings Darling Highway multiple directions as well at this hour. Six Agate Roundabout, seeing some slow-moving traffic, especially on the John F. Kennedy Drive side. That's eastbound. And West Bay Street near Saunders Beach, you've got heavy eastbound traffic as you approach that roundabout with New Providence Highway. East of Arawak Key on West Bay Street, you'll see again the slow-moving traffic heading into downtown near Nassau Street. And then we've got Independence Drive, both directions seeing heavy, heavy traffic this morning, east and westbound. You might want to try the alternate routes, Robinson Road, and maybe Soldier, but Soldier busy for you as well, eastbound to East Street. Blue Hill Road, heavy traffic from Carmichael straight up to Independence Drive, even north of that area heading into the Big Pond area. And East Street also busy north and south of the Soldier Road intersection. Prince Charles Drive and Robinson Road seeing heavy, slow-moving westbound traffic. Prince Charles Drive, the major intersections, especially heading into the Soldier Road intersection. onto Robinson, very slow and heavy traffic westbound, straight up to Marathon East-West Highway. Old Trail also looking busy for you northbound at this hour. Good luck to you. That's your real-time traffic in your Morning Blend Traffic Alert, brought to you by NUA Insurance Agents and Brokers. Whether you're on the road or planning your next move, they've got you covered. Visit NUAinsurance.com for an instant motor quote or stop by your nearest branch today.
It was a long time ago, I want you to know, Mackey Street was called Simonomo. I had lots of friends, we had no toys, but hey, we were the valley boys. We were closer than family way back then. Right here, I'd like to mention a few of them.
We are back with Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Quite strong along with DeQuesta Dean on this Tuesday morning. Coming up in just a bit, we're going to be talking with the 2026 Bahamas Primary School Student of the Year. We're going to meet him this morning. And then later in business, it's our spotlight on the orange economy. We are highlighting some of the loans and partnership opportunities for creatives in the region. So that's all ahead on this Tuesday. We continue with what's in the news. We're going to wrap up what we were talking about before, this disturbing story, this 8-year-old shot in Bimini and by his 12-year-old brother, it appears. Just a lack of information on exactly what is going on here and trying to understand it.
Yeah.
All right, so texters, don't get confused. This person says here, so an American who bought, no, I don't even think I can read this. This is not what happened. And Bahamians can have licensed handguns. Mm-hmm. It is not impossible.
Really?
But it's definitely not common.
Right.
It's a very interesting process, mm-hmm. but, so it is possible. And, okay. Okay, I don't know what this text is about. Telling us about people we need to ban. Some of them already are. It is legal for an American to bring and carry a licensed handgun into our country. Is the law similar to gambling in our casino? One law for them, another for us. Again, if you have a license, what the minister is saying, just to make sure it's not accessible
illegal,
to children.
Right. Yeah.
Right. The Bahamians can have them mm-hmm. too. Dwight, you're absolutely right. First week or day on the job, you come on the job ready to work, expecting all possibilities. The leadership should definitely not be basic. Wow. Again, we are at a point of leaving Bahamas in the dark. No accountability because nobody's being held accountable mm-hmm. besides the small man. This is, I guess, to you. No, ma'am, no breaks. He knows better. He was trying to be politically correct because
he was.
Anyway, I'm not going to read the letters.
He's trying to give you something.
We'd rather not get that.
No. You want something versus nothing.
Right.
Yeah, you want something.
Boy. Okay, now it's all... Everyone's gone crazy with speculation. Let's put the text line down for a bit. Wow. All right, so let's get to the big headline in the NASA Guardian today. And this is good news. Economy grows by 3.8%. This is apparently the largest the economy has ever been, and there's also a story in here from Minister of Finance, Michael Alkita, saying the government's on track to meet the budget surplus. We'll get to that in a moment. But take a listen to this. This is from the Bahamas National Statistical Institute. They had a press conference on Friday, and brought all this good news to the public. Take a listen to this report from our Vonique Toot.
Economic activity in the Bahamas continued its upward trajectory in 2025, with gross domestic product rising by 7.3% in nominal terms and 3.8% in real terms, according to the annual GDP estimates. Bahamas National Statistical Institute national account statistician Tira Newbold says the growth was driven primarily by the financial and insurance industries, transport and storage, accommodation and food services, and construction industries, which accounted for the largest share of economic expansion.
In 2025, the value added generated through the production of goods and services in the Bahamian economy was estimated at $17.2 billion in current prices and $15.2 billion in constant prices.
The financial and insurance activity sector recorded one of the strongest performances, expanding by $203 million, a 20% increase compared to the previous year.
This upward movement was driven predominantly by the insurance industry subsector, which experienced a growth in total premiums income. The accommodation and food services sector increased by approximately $79 million, or 5%. The accommodation industry was responsible for the majority of this increase in this group. The construction industry increased by approximately $80 million, or 9%. This increase is mirrored by the rise of imports of construction materials.
General government final consumption also posted solid gains in 2025, growing by $188 million in real terms, or 9% year over year. The increase reflected higher wages and salaries, depreciation, and greater purchases of goods and services. Exports of goods and services rose by $107 million, representing a 2% increase in 2025.
This sector includes the contribution of the economy by tourism, which includes both stopover and cruise visitor spending and represents the bulk of total exports of services.
Meanwhile, household expenditure for 2025 reached $8.4 billion, signaling continued consumer spending across the economy.
This would show that there is money moving in the economy, and compared to the previous year, there was more.
Reporting for the Guardian News Network, I'm Vonique Tude.
Okay, interesting stuff there. So I'm just curious. So the insurance part there, the increases are because more people bought insurance, or is it because premiums went up?
Could be both. I'm sure it's a combination.
So you got more money because I had to pay you more because it costs
sure
more for me to insure things. You sure it's a combination of both?
I'm sure it's a combination.
I talk last year about how much my car insurance went
you
up
did.
By?
Yeah.
Out of nowhere?
Yeah, you did.
For a 3-year-old car?
And house insurance is including in that too, Dwight?
Anyway.
And the increases are consistent?
Because I wonder. Yeah. I just think maybe it's... Anyway. But it's great. It's good news. Largest ever the economy has been, I guess.
Is it really good
People
news?
Are finding innovative ways to get us to spend money. And so it's great. It's beautiful.
Expenditure is up. Mm. That's great. That's beautiful.
Is it really? You all are spending more, so things are good.
It's because we have no choice. Seriously, you have no choice.
The economy's growing.
And that's the measure
you don't,
of...
You, why, don't you feel good?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
No, this is excellent.
It is not. It is not.
The economy is growing.
What does that mean for me? That I'm paying more. Prices are increasing.
Capitalism.
So
that's how
why
works.
Am I celebrating that?
Because you're free to do these things.
Well, I enjoy the freedom.
Yeah, there you go. So, government on track to meet the budget surplus, though. This was just a few weeks ago. Oh. That, um, the financial watchdogs were like, it doesn't look possible.
But, and all of a sudden it is.
Well, that's what they were saying. But the government maintains that it's always been a possibility. So our Rachel Scott writing about it, with the budget communication to be read in Parliament tomorrow. Minister of Finance Michael Halkita says that the government is largely on target.
Okay, largely.
Largely on target.
Choice of word.
Okay. To meet its prediction of a surplus for the 2025-2026 surplus, fiscal year rather, which ends June 30th. So you got a month and a week or so to be on target. So Halkita is telling the NASA Guardian, quote, during the year there were some unforeseen things that we had to deal with, but I think we remain largely on target to achieve our objective. When the current budget was debated last June, the Davis administration projected a budget surplus of $75 million.
Mm.
Mid-year budget figures released in February, however, revealed a deficit of $342.2 million. February.
Okay.
You know, we've been spending a lot since then. Mm-hmm. The quest of the economy grew 3.8%. Mm-hmm. Had to pay much more in insurance. So, you know. And revealed, you're right. So up to December 2025, that was the deficit. The numbers provoked widespread skepticism over how the government would meet its fiscal targets. An increase in unpaid arrears to the tune of $241 million, nearly double the $121 million at the same point in the previous fiscal year, also called into question the broader narrative of fiscal responsibility. However, Halkita said that as a new budget year approaches, the government remains committed to improving public finances, growing the economy, and improving the bonds' credit rating to investment grade. He said, quote, we told the country that we would be exercising discipline, reducing the deficit, reducing the need to borrow such large amounts of money every year, and that we've had some success. So the idea is to continue on that track of fiscal discipline, growing the economy, being disciplined in our expenditure and our administration, but at the same time balancing that with making sure that we have enough allocations for all the public services and the things that the government needs to provide. So one of the primary questions heading into the annual budget debate is always related to taxation. As it relates to introduction of new taxes, Halkita said the Davis administration does not wish to add to the existing cost of living burdens. Does not wish to add. He says, quote, we're just coming out of the election, and one of the main issues for the public, if not the main issue, was the cost of living. So we've heard that, and our objective is to do what we can to reduce the cost of living. We see what's happening around the world in terms of the war in the Middle East and the uncertainty of that and how that impacts things, fuel prices, and how that trickles throughout the economy. So we always have to, maintain a stance to mitigate the cost of living, and we don't want to do anything that would cause us to interrupt the growth that we've been seeing or having.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, so as you know, the Davis administration's first term was marked by several key reductions to VAT. Initially, an across-the-board reduction in the rate to 10%, followed later by further cuts on food and grocery stores, medication and other essential items. And Halkita says there's been a steady trend of reduction on certain duties, especially widely used products targeted for certain segments. He says they maintain the stance that wherever they can reduce the cost of living, they'll try to do so.
Really?
And he says, stay tuned. So I guess tomorrow's going to be an interesting day. We're going to hear this. Let's take this call really quickly. We want to read these messages, then we have to take a break. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Dwight. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning.
Nice to have you back, man.
Thank you very much.
I think we need to come to realization that by now that the police force runs, our police force runs different from the police force in the United States. Their whole setup is different. That's why you could demand information from them. Our police force don't, when you see they're investigating something, they have no obligation to give anybody any information. You agree on that?
That's how they've been acting. I don't know if that is...
There's nothing in the law that they have to give us, the public, any information until they finish with their investigation,
uh-huh.
Regardless of how long that's going to take.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel it number one, it's because people don't draw conclusions before the case is finished.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have some people, when you see something happen, they will believe gossip and stuff and put stuff out there that is not the truth.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, do you feel that this helps with the cases they present? Does it help?
I have a problem when the case is finished, the nation doesn't get information so that it could heal.
I don't even mean that. I mean, when it goes to court, it's not like the secrecy helps to increase the number of convictions. All we see is cases getting thrown out all the time. So it doesn't help.
Well, cases does get thrown as long as it's also cases that is finished and come to conclusion, but we don't get any information on that either. And I feel that sometimes we really need to get the public need to get information so that it could heal, so that it could invent stuff to prevent stuff like that happening in the future.
Definitely.
When you see why some people do what they do, we don't get any of that. The public is always moaning.
Yeah.
And it's asking from within that we want to heal. And for that, we need information for that.
Absolutely. And whether they, if in this case with the what happened in Bimini, stating whether these boys are Bahamians or Americans would not hurt any investigation.
It just that
seems
is
like a given.
It wouldn't hurt. But then again, we don't have to get our information from just the police. You have family members. You see how people act inside the United States? When you see those medias and people get scared before something, they go to anybody, family members, they try and get in contact with them because we are not obligated and bound by information from the police. We can get our information from the people who are part of, you see the plane crash? You had the pilot that already get information. You had the woman who was on the plane already gotten information from those people in the state. I'm not too sure, but the pilot, where he put his information out there, I don't know if it's somebody over here he was talking to or somebody in the state.
Mm.
But the information, the United States got, media got information. But they didn't get it from their people. They didn't get it from the drug people, them squads or DEU or DUA or that. They didn't get that from them.
Yeah.
They got that from the people who was on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? It was an investigation still going on. And I feel that we need to, if we could get information from those who are part of the crime, family members, stuff like that, and we've been doing it.
Yeah.
We've been doing it. But, you know, at the end of the day, if the case is finished, we should be able to get information to heal. Why is the case is going on? We shouldn't put stuff out there because the Bahamas is very small and, you know, people are connected and they don't even know they're connected.
Thank you very much.
And that could damage the case.
Appreciate your call. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. One final call on this. Yes. Caller, are you there? Hi, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
You know, addressing this growth in the economy, right, and centered around taxation, you know, we can grow the economy as much as we want if we don't properly tax it. You know, they're taxing the people that are making the money in the economy, you see. And when you talk about our budget and debt to our economy, right, debt to GDP, we seem like we want to mimic the United States so we can act like the United States, act like we are some hegemon, you know, some military might. You know, like we print money like the United States and you know, and the like, and make policies for everyone else, you know, to force us them to buy, our bonds or, you know, and the like. So you know, what we are doing, right, is we are, in our economy, what we are actually doing is privatizing, whether it's to, direct, foreign direct investment or what you call local investment. It's still privatization. You see, the need for people health insurance, national health insurance. You're making money of private health insurance, but national health insurance is suffering. Poor people can't afford health. Poor people can't afford proper education, facilities. and the like, you see, and you know what I see in this country is a political organization. They're only concerned about winning the election, you know. But how they govern, you know, they all are like this TLP. They call themselves progress. They are progressive. They are progressing, in what you call it a conservative manner. You know, a lot of conservative progress, but not progressive, progress.
Okay. You know, thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're meeting the new Primary School Student of the Year right here on Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Stay with us.
I met a son when I was about 4. By the graveyard, he called Seminole. Roscoe Clinton,
he was
always free. Gary Smith went to 3-4, and then he stayed. John L. and Clyde, he all ran amok. And even Everett Sloan,
he was a body
lived up. We had good and bad times, definitely so, because we were products of
Seminole.
Noby Irvin, Junior Clark, and Tweet, Corley Pigeon, Scarves, I wish you could meet. Jimmy, Frankie, Johnny, Terry, Christie, who? Preston, Stewart, Charles Sanders, and Rooney, too. Philip, Nodded, and Leslie.
Doesn't mess about when it comes to product range and product knowledge.
If it's a new product coming in the store, we walk the store and study that product.
One thing with our boss, if a new product comes in, he takes the time and he's always keeping us up to date with product knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had 9 weeks of different products that we had to study, and we had exams at the end of each product.
Yeah.
The only way we could sell the product effective, we have to know that product.
Yeah, that helps us
to relate to our customers. It gives us better knowledge to know what product to introduce to them. You understand? So we can know what product to give them to use and what product not to give them to use.
Mm-hmm.
So product knowledge is really key in Sherwin Williams.
They got the keys. And the key is the product knowledge that comes with our extensive product range at Sherwin Williams Paints, Bahamas. Find color in every day.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Pleasure. Welcome back to Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Dwight Strano with Duquesa Dean. And, yeah, we're celebrating the 2026 Bahamas Primary School Student of the Year. We've got the new winner in studio with us from Lyford Key International School, Dechaz Gibson. Good morning. Congratulations. Good to have you with us, sir.
Good morning. It's an honor.
All right. And we've got his proud parents with us as well, Donovan and Rochette Gibson. Good morning. Great to have you all with us. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
And we also have from the Bahamas Primary School Student of the Year Foundation, we have Ricardo DeVoe. Sir, always a pleasure. Good morning.
It is a pleasure to be here, Dwight. Good morning. Good morning. Mm-hmm. I'm just excited to be here.
All right, we're going to talk to Chaz in a bit. But you, Ricardo, remind folks about this and, again, how many students were honored and how we got to pick a winner from all these wonderful students across the country.
Well, one of the things about it, on Saturday night, we had our 30th annual Bahamas Primary School Student of the Year.
30th annual.
30th annual. On Saturday, we had 123 students representing 14 islands. We had our students... Every child walked away with a minimum of $1,000.
Wow.
We offered $286,000 in scholarship, $65,000+ in prizes. We paid for all of our Family Island students to come in. Our top 36 students all got laptops in addition to their scholarships. At the last minute, we had an author who submitted to give each one of the nominees a book.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's like things are just coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have a winner, our new Primary School Student of the Year 2026, Dechaz Gibson from Lyford Key International School, who has a resume out of this world. I am sorry for the... Before I get out there, let me tell the public, the foundation does not judge. We mm-hmm. have an independent panel outside mm-hmm. of our body who actually review the portfolios received, and they go through all of the things that the students are involved in, their grades, mm-hmm. Community involvement, mm-hmm. and then they make a selection.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people the... persons have been asking, well, how do we keep this also a secret? It's because the process of judging is really, I would say, I've never seen something. It is really, really, when I say the integrity of judging, mm-hmm. our judging panel, each one of our judges, when they start, they judge, and then when they're finished with judging, they seal their scores, and the scores are then sent to a chief tally judge in the accounting that tallies everything. And then when the results come back, four persons are called into a meeting. And just the four persons know who the winners are until the night.
Sounds like an election. All right, so this is pretty cool. And again, remind, you said it, these are students from all over
all
the country.
The students, private, public, the students who are representing Family Island, students who are representing institutions, and we are an organization that honors everybody regardless of color, creed, where they are from, and so persons out there know that these students are the best and brightest mm-hmm. from throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to get to Dechaz in a bit, but you tell us, why did he stand out? You mentioned his impressive resume. Why did he stand out amongst these these wonderful students?
When I was reading his bio, to read about this young man plays about 10 instruments.
Wow.
Chess. He is a world scholar. He's been one of the youngest persons to go to the that's the Scholars Bowl.
Mm.
He is doing so much phenomenal. I don't know how he does it at his age.
Mm-hmm.
But
and how old is he?
12.
Wow.
11. Sorry. Yeah, he is 12. Yeah, he is 11.
Mm.
But I'm telling you, he is I mean, it was really, really impressive. Really impressive.
All right, let's talk to the man of the hour. congratulations again to Chaz. How many instruments do you play?
Thank you. And so the recorder, then the clarinet, the saxophone, piano, the drums, and the steel fans, the ukulele.
Wow. Wait, ukulele? How did you get into that?
Because when I transferred to Lyford Key, my music class was teaching ukulele, and then we had to play for, like, a concert.
Okay.
Nice.
So what's your favorite?
My favorite is, and the most current one, is my piano, as I recently just got a distinction from grade 1 to grade 3 piano.
Excellent. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're reading music. Are you writing anything yet?
Maybe when I grow older.
All right, great stuff. So, how do you do? Ricardo's asking, how do you do this, play chess, and keep up with your schoolwork?
I believe it's because of my exceptional time management skills.
Oh, boy.
And I love it. I stay organized and just focus on completing my responsibilities first.
Oh gosh. Can you teach me how to do that? I desperately need it. Wow. So give us some tips. Tell us about time management and what's worked for you.
So on Tuesdays, I do paddle and chess. So normally, if I have, an assignment due on, Wednesday, it takes me, an hour to get home from Life to Key. So I would get home very late as I have two hour activities. So I will have to do the assignment, usually a day before or, the weekend before so that I can put my best effort into it and really don't have to rush it.
Yeah, wow.
That's smart.
Wow.
Not waiting for the last minute.
So what about schoolwork? What are your favorite subjects?
So, to be honest with you, I actually like all my subjects.
Oh, man.
But especially, I like science class because I like learning about the why and how things work, and I want to be an engineer when I grow up.
Oh, boy. Okay. What type of engineer?
I'm still thinking about it, but something with mechanics or chemical.
That's excellent. You looking forward to high school?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to high school.
You staying at Life for Key?
Yes. Yeah. I will stay at Life for Key.
All right. Wonderful stuff. All right. So, Mom, Dad, you all, you can see it. You're beaming with pride. You're very proud of this young man. Tell us about him. He's being humble, but tell us about why you think he was able to emerge as the Prime School Student of the Year. Rochette?
Chaz has an exceptional, he's very intelligent. It's natural for him to do well academically, but he's very focused and he has a long attention span, and so he knows what he has to do. We've instilled in our kids, both of our kids, the importance of being dedicated. You know, we have a routine, and so definitely even without our supervision, they know when they come home, if we're home or not, there are certain activities that have to be done first. And so we instilled those values from a very young age. I come from a family of educators. Mm-hmm. Never had summers off. We had summer school after school. And I quickly learned to adopt that when I had kids of my own. I saw the importance of it. And so, you know, to make sure that there was no balance, no learning curve over the holidays, we continued with that. And so that's become embedded in them. And it's been very, very helpful as they get older because they have these, you know, good habits, strong habits, and they love to do well. They love to excel. Mm-hmm. And so Jazz is very curious. He's very, very open-minded, both of my kids. And he has the benefit of having an older brother. You know, when you have an older sibling, you kind of tag along.
Right.
And so tagging along with community initiatives in addition to just being having someone to look up to. So some of the instruments that he plays as a result of his older brother playing, and he saw him being dedicated, and he's like, I want to try that as well. Some of them are self-taught by YouTube.
Wow.
And he said, Mommy, I'm really keen on this. And so we invested and said, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send you to music school, etc. And anything that they're interested in, we nurture that.
Excellent. You know? Mm-hmm. that has it feel.
Kilt's great. Mm-hmm. Dwight, I just want to say congratulations to all of the other nominees. And also, especially the first runner-up, who we know well.
Okay.
Deshaz and Cole were primary school classmates at Summit Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Deshaz first got his foundation. And so we just want to congratulate him, because I certainly wouldn't want to be a judge in this sort of competition, because all of the kids were great. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure all of their bios were exceptional. Mm-hmm. And so we're happy that Deshaz would have been chosen, of course. But we also say congratulations to all of the other parents on a job well done.
Wow, wow.
But of course I'm happy.
Of course.
with my outcome.
Oh, yeah. Right. Sure.
But I would say, you know, it's well-deserved. Mm. I've watched Deshaz over the past 4 years. Stayed consistent, stayed disciplined, stayed focused. And it wasn't difficult for us. There weren't times when he would say no.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have community service. He would have homework. He would have assignments. He would have music. And it's just, let's go.
Yeah.
And he said, okay. And so he didn't make it difficult for us. So the journey was not something that I can truly say we had to force him.
Right.
So he worked for it. He deserved it. And I think, you know, hats off to him. Yeah. I'm very proud to see that his hard work and dedication paid off.
Yeah definitely.
Well, congratulations to him and to parents who saw a natural gifting, like Mom said, and help to harness that and cultivate that and help to teach him the principles that he would need to be successful. So we don't want to underplay the role parents play in cultivating students like this.
It's quite a sacrifice.
Yeah. So what did you win?
So I won a check of $8,000 scholarship money.
Excellent.
And a brand new laptop.
Awesome.
And also, that's like, it was not, I got a Starbucks gift card.
Wow.
Great.
That one was from the past.
The past
winner,
one.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Oh, okay. That's so excellent.
Nice. Yeah.
2025 winner. Yeah. She was gracious enough to present him with it. Token of appreciation.
That is pretty cool.
Okay. So that way the Starbucks came in. Thank you very much, Ms. Moxie.
So tell us more about the community service project and what you are working on there.
So in my community service, I've done a lot of stuff. Like, every year I do beach cleanups, and I was an active member of my ecology club where we planted gardens, and I helped plant gardens for tomatoes and other fruits. And I was at the Red Cross Fair annual, and I made care packages for All Saints Camp in 2022. That's just some of them.
Okay.
And I still do annual beach cleanups.
Good stuff. Good stuff there. Now, we heard Mom. She says no summer's off. But what do you do for fun? Do you have fun, and what are you going to be doing this summer?
For fun, I like to play piano at home.
Okay, yeah, no, that is a lot of fun.
I also play chess too at home
because
I find that fun too.
Yeah, good stuff. Any plans for this summer?
I don't know, but I think that maybe to go in like a summer camp and like meet new kids because that's what I did last summer, and that it wasn't even bad. It was like a good experience. We got to row, and it was like outdoor stuff. Mm. It was a really interactive experience.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. Ricardo, 30th anniversary. Mm. Where do you go from here? What is next?
Well, I made an announcement on Saturday that I'm stepping down.
Oh, wow.
What?
At the end of the 27 awards program.
Wow.
Yes, I made that announcement, and like how some places said they were shocked. But, you know, I shared with my wife and I shared with my family that I want to be able to be a part of assisting the transformation of our organization. I don't want to stay here and tell, although this is a baby of mine, this is something that I gave birth to.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to for us to have a successful transition of leadership and someone who will take this to an even higher level while I'm still also able to assist the person with giving advice or support where they may need it. And so, yeah, so at the end of the 27th awards program, it is my intention to step down.
Wow. Well, we salute you, yes, and thank you for all the great work that you've done.
Thank you very much.
All these years.
Thank you.
So, what is next for the Gibsons and for the Chaz and all of you? What's happening?
Well, Chaz, you want to chime in?
Sure.
What's next for you?
On your path to being an engineer.
Yes, so the next step it would be to just continue working hard and stay disciplined and be respectful and kind and always believe in myself, stay resilient, never give up.
Wow,
that's amazing.
You are an inspiration to all of us.
Indeed.
And we all need to be much more like you. Thank you so much. Congratulations again. Congratulations to everybody.
Thank you.
Mom and Dad.
Thank you. So I'd like to say a special thank you to the Student of the Year Foundation, Ricardo DeVoe, for your selflessness, and to all the sponsors. This is really important for the youth. People think that Generation Alpha is lost. And we still have a lot of gifted students out there. We just need persons to unlock the potential. So parents, dedicate and sacrifice some time for your kids. Let God give every kid kid a gift. And it's just for us to, some are shown naturally and some have to be unlocked.
Yeah.
Let's unlock gifts in our kids. Yeah. Mentors, teachers, we all have a part to play in them. Okay?
Absolutely.
So thank you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Ricardo DeVoe. Thank you, Donovan and Rochette Gibson. Thank you so much. And Chaz Gibson, again, the Bahamas Primary School Student of the Year. Congratulations once again.
Thank you so much.
Dwight, I just want to thank you for keeping up the tradition that this is their first interview.
Yes.
So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That is an honored tradition. Yeah. I think now for the past 4, 5, 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Maybe even more than that.
Every year, the winner, this is their first stop. So Dwight, we thank you very much.
Definitely our pleasure. Thank you all again. All right, we're going to break for news and be back with the Morning Glen Business. Stay with us right here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
But I won't be that way. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a thought. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a mistake. Tell me why I never want to hear you say.
No one likes a fender bender.
Oh, man.
From a little scratch to a full mashup, NUA Insurance has got you covered with auto insurance tailored to fit your needs and budget. For affordable rates with free on-site accident assistance, visit us online or in branch and just ask us. NUA Insurance. Ask us because we've got you covered.
In the world of business, technology is not a choice. It's a necessity. And for businesses that demand excellence, there's only one choice for unparalleled support and cutting-edge technology. Custom Computers. You have challenges and we have solutions. Computing, networking, storage, and printing for enterprises large and small, aligned with premium brands like HP, Microsoft, Konica Minolta, and more. Get tech done the right way with Custom Computers. Call the know-how team at 396-1101.
Screws and Fasteners World, Valpo Avenue and Palm Beach Street, has those hard-to-find fasteners for you right now. You can find stainless hex, carriage bolts, galvanized bolts, threaded rods, nails, self-tap screws, sex bolts, anchor bolts, turnbuckles, masonry tools, hand tools, and weed whacker strings. Check out the rope selection and car body fasteners, too. Special orders are welcome. It's your number one fastener store. Screws and Fasteners World, Valpo Avenue and Palm Beach Streets. Call 326-1976.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day. Oh,
Good morning and welcome to Morning Blend Business on this Tuesday, May 26th, 2026. Welcome back to our Morning Blend listeners. Once again, I'm quite strong along with Duquesa Dean. And at this time, every fourth Tuesday of the month, it's our monthly spotlight on the Orange Economy series. With the Ministry of, the Ministry's changed now?
Economic
it's
Affairs.
Still, is it still that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know there was a thing. Ministry of Economic Affairs, as you heard. Angelique McKay.
Well, we saw the growth.
Yeah. Good morning.
Angelique McKay is the head of the Orange Economy Unit and is with us as always. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
We also have a guest from the Bahamas Development Bank. Somaya Cargill. It's been a while, but Somaya, great to have you with us. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
All right, so we've got a lot to talk about this morning, and the spotlight on Orange Economy series today is going to be on cultural loans and partnership opportunities for creatives in the region.
Yes, sir. Regionally.
All right, so before we get to Somaya to tell us more about that, tell us about why this is important, Angelique.
This is very important because one of the things that creatives always, always asking for is funding. And not all of the times grants are available. So sometimes if we believe so much in what it is that we're doing as a creative, we may have to take out a loan. Right? It may not be a huge loan, but it may be a loan that's the size of something that can get us started so that we can pay it back. Mm-hmm. Our business can begin to grow. We can spread our wings. We can expand, you know, and be able to do a lot of the things that we as creatives wanted to do. And for us to be able to hear the expert in this area, give us all of the steps. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we believe wholeheartedly within the Orange Economy Unit is to hear the voice of the experts, listen to the experts, not fly by night or I think this is it or I think that is it. You know, we get it from the experts so we know which path is best for us to be able to take based on the options and opportunities that they're able to present.
Mm. So, but what is more common? Is it mainly grants that we're dealing with here, or how frequently would you need to go the loan route?
Well, it depends on what it is as a creative that you want. And then loans are not that readily available. Mm-hmm. You may have an idea, and you may need a certain amount. Let's just say 5,000. We'll go with 5,000. Mm-hmm. You have a loan. You can get a loan for 5,000. You meet all of the requirements. You also would have applied for a particular grant. Grant cycles sometimes take 6 months, 9 months, 12 months in order for that to be realized. Do you as a creative want to wait 6 months, 9 months, 12 months with this idea that's burning in your mind right now, and you have everything in place to jumpstart it except that $5,000?
Yeah.
You know, so it all depends.
Okay, all right. So, Somaya, again, you're the Deputy Managing Director of Bahamas Development Bank and the Head of Strategic Development and Initiatives. So tell us about your role and the BDB's role in supporting creatives. I mean, that might not be something that people think about when it comes to BDB. But let's talk about it. What is available to creatives, people in the Orange Economy?
Okay, so first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for inviting me to talk about something that I'm really passionate about, which is development, including finance and investment in the creative industries. I'm actually calling in today from a city in Colombia, Medellin.
Wow.
I just completed a study mission with the Inter-American Development Bank and a company called Connect out of Bogota. And it was a really transformative and immersive experience that spoke to a lot of what we need to do in the Bahamas to support the creative industries. What we saw in Colombia is really an ecosystem-based approach, and I'm definitely going to get into, you know, how financing connects to that ecosystem-based approach. But I really want to shout out the team that organized the study mission, Sylvia Dohert from the Inter-American Development Bank, Diana Gaviera, who's the CEO of Connect, who personally escorted us to three cities, Bogota, Medellin, and Cali, which are really showing the possibilities of what the creative industries can do, not just for economic development, but also social development. The rest of the team, Anna, Angelique. And one of the things that really emerged from this mission is the importance of collaboration if we want to be successful in the creative industry. And we find that people across the world and across the Caribbean, because it wasn't just me in the Bahamas, there were other Bahamians, there were persons from other Caribbean countries, so there was representatives from Barbados, Trinidad, Suriname, St. Vincent and Grenadines, is that there's an incredible generosity of spirit and willingness to share best practices, lessons learned, and honesty, not just during the week of this mission, but also going forward. When you talk about the needs of the financial needs of an entrepreneur, you say $5,000. Comparatively within the ecosystem, to come to an institution like the Bahamas Development Bank, we might not be the best place for something like that. But where we sit within the ecosystem is building out the network, building out the catalyzing the opportunities so that there are all of the system actors working to provide that entrepreneur, not just with, you know, $5,000, because you may think, okay, I need $5,000. What's really missing in many instances is access to critical infrastructure, it's access to critical capacity development, and it's so the question of financing is really secondary to those issues, mm-hmm. in addition to, of course, critically, market access, because that is what's going to help us when we start talking about creative industries. It helps us overcome some of the challenges in our environment, because we're a small island developing state. We're 400,000 people. We face limitations in relation to scale, market size, and productivity, as well as fragmentation. And that impacts access to finance for creatives. Because it creates so much risk and uncertainty from a lending institution, we have limited resources when it comes to providing grants. And so what we see is that through collaboration and coordinated ecosystems, we can overcome so many of those limitations. And I just want to shout out some of the work that's happening in other Caribbean countries. What we see is that Barbados is partnering with an African country to produce their own IV fluids. Suriname has something called Fab Labs, which are spaces that are filled with heavy equipment like CNC lasers, 3D printers to support their manufacturing, and Trinidad and Tobago is articulating policies and testing AI for government. And so, again, there's just so much opportunity to partner and build regional connections that support innovation, trade, and creativity. And BDB, of course, we're a member of the National Creative Council. We're a member of the Global Finance and Common, which is all of the National Development Bank's Committee for Creativity. And so we're really committed to working with our partners to support cultural industry.
Wow. All right. So I want to find out more about that. But you got me very interested now in Colombia and what's going on there. And while you were talking, I was listening to you, but I did Google what's going on. It's very exciting. Tell us a little bit more about what they're doing specifically in Colombia that we can all learn from in the region.
Well, Colombia is a really interesting location for the site of this mission. It's ranked as having the second strongest startup ecosystem in Latin America after Brazil, even though Brazil has a significantly larger population and economy. And that's really important for the Bahamas, because what it means is that they are able to do more with less because they are investing intentionally. And what are they investing in? They're investing in things like ecosystem coordination. The company that I spoke to, Connect, their role is actually to map out all of the partners in the ecosystem and bring them together. What's very interesting about Colombia is the roles that each of the ecosystem actors play. So, for example, private sector in Colombia takes a very active role in helping startups scale and ultimately be successful. So to take that from Bahamian to a Bahamian context, that would be like a cruise ship or a hotel line working directly with entrepreneurs to say, you know, this is what I need. This is how I would like it to be delivered. Can you help me build it? And then actually directly investing in those businesses. And that's actually a way to access capital that goes outside the conventional, okay, I need a loan or a grant. Mm-hmm. We actually have an example of that being successful here in the Bahamas through our Disney project. So Disney needed, when they came into South Eleuthera, they needed more. They needed experiences, they needed retail, and the South Eleuthera ecosystem was underdeveloped. So Disney invested, and Regina can correct me, on the call, of course, is Regina Smith, assistant manager and project lead for the Disney initiative. They invested maybe $600,000 directly into the entrepreneurs to give them capacity development and access to small grants. And that program was wildly successful, and it really demonstrates how smaller target investment that has a clear market endpoint can really make a difference financially for businesses. So if you think about what types of businesses, many of them are in the creative space, if not all of them, considering what exactly they entail. So if you look at some of the businesses that are creating small arts and crafts, they started making, you know, six figures in 6 months. Wow. That's how much money they started making. And it took a lot of groundwork. It took a lot of hand-holding, but it took a very targeted approach. And then when we look at the experiences, you bring in very specific types of capacity building. We have a lot of incubators. We have a lot of workshops. We have a lot of classes. Money is being spent, right? Money is going to these things. But then are we seeing the endpoint? And that, for me, I think the endpoint should be money in pockets, dollars and cents, for persons who are working in these spaces. And the Disney project really showed us how to do that. And when we come back to Colombia, we see that the Colombian model is really built around access to market. So in Bogota, for example, the Chamber of Commerce has over 500,000 members. And their Chamber of Commerce has its, to give you a sense of the scale, they have 20 clusters in terms of their market segments, and they also have a university of their own. So when we talk about capacity development in the Bogota Chamber of Commerce, it's at a scale that we can't even quite imagine just yet. But one of the important things that they do is they organize market access platforms. So when we look at the Bogota Fashion Week, for example, yes, you're seeing amazing creativity in terms of the what's coming down the runway, but that platform is much more than just pretty dresses. It's a platform for deal making. It's where international companies are coming into Colombia and they're buying for Europe, for America, for around the world. And when we then look back, if you have a market system that is designed around market access, it changes the kinds of capacity development that you do. So in Bogota, they're doing things like the type of capacity development in Fashion Lab is about internationalization of markets. So from the very beginning, the creative is being taught to think about themselves and their brand in a way that is, how do I market it, not just within my own country, but broader. Where can I take this around the world? And they are provided with resources from the very beginning to be able to do that. And that's just on the fashion side. Mm. In the on the music side, in Medellin, which is a place where reggaeton was born, and we all know about reggaeton, mm-hmm. where artists like J Balvin have become famous. What do they do with their music artists? You have entities like that are set up just to take promising young artists from the process of creating their music, their records, etc., to market access points, which is where deals are actually being made. So these festivals that are being held within Colombia, where artists are being sent out from Colombia to other festivals, these are used as a platform for creative exports. And so again, we see that it's not just leaving artists to, you know, try to figure it out on their own. It's an entire ecosystem that's really built around them. And just one more thing that I add, I touched on the role of private sector. I want to talk about where public sector is investing. And this is something that we actually saw very early on in our conversations with local creatives. In Colombia, they're investing in the critical infrastructure for creativity. So what does that mean? In Cali, for example, another city, a predominantly black city, what they are investing in is in spaces where creatives can come and do have access to green rooms, cameras, VFX equipment, VFX software, and it's all based on a sliding scale based on your income. So everybody has access to these things. And as a result, you see this, because of this investment in infrastructure, you're seeing these cities become hubs for exports for things like animation and music videos and things like that. Similarly in Medellin, where I talked about Empower, they were like, well, we have a recording studio right upstairs. When we spoke to creatives, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, Regina can remind me, one of the things that they talked about in the Bahamas is struggling to find access to equipment, struggling to find access to studio time. And so we think that the solution might be, okay, well, you need to go and you should go and borrow, get a loan from the bank to try to borrow, to try to do this yourself, essentially, when there are so many other people who are trying to do the same thing.
Right.
When in reality, what we see is a real need to think about investment in the creative industries from a structural and critical infrastructure level, because that is making a really big difference here in Colombia.
My goodness. So, Maya Cargill, you said a lot there.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So, Regina Smith, welcome. Good to have you with us, wow. Number one. You said six figures, people were making six figures. This is in relation to the Disney. That is.
Yes.
That is unbelievable.
Amazing.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So, I mean, it sounds like they really have it together in Colombia. And I got to tell you, I don't know, Angelique can set me straight here, but I feel kind of depressed because I feel like here, no, because, I mean, they're doing what needs to be done in Colombia,
right.
But here I feel like you're on your own.
You're
left.
You're pulled
you're just,
back.
You are. It's up to you.
It's a fight.
And we have a long way to go to get to where they are.
Yes,
in Colombia. Or am I missing something?
No, you're not missing anything. Samaya.
That's not the takeaway at all.
Not the takeaway, just an observation. You said so many positive things too.
If anything, I want us to be really excited. I was not the only Bahamian on the tour, and of course this is being done in collaboration with the IDB. And so why are we even on this tour in the first place? Mm. It's because we're trying to work right now with the IDB lab to develop programs and ecosystem programs that are similar to this. And so what this really shows is that BDB has already been articulating an approach with the Disney program, with some of the work we've done in the joint SDG fund. And so this really helps to pull that thought process together. And so I think that with the support of the Ministry of Culture, with the support of Ministry of Economic Affairs, what we can see is that there are a lot of opportunities for us to support the creative industries in new ways. And like I said, the Colombians are so generous. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you know what, whatever you need, you want to meet with somebody, we'll have a meeting with you. We met with the guy that bought Scotiabank in Colombia. Like they brought in the big guns, and all of these people are saying, you know, if the Bahamas wants support, we're here to support. And so what we should be is really excited to take advantage of what is available to us. And one thing that they said to us was, don't try to reinvent the wheel. What you're trying to do is leapfrog.
Yeah.
We should be so excited to say, okay, this is already happening. This is what I can. Don't just take everything. Obviously, we're different in the Bahamas than Colombia, but we can absorb it and adapt it and use it to jump ahead so much faster. Because you have to think about what was happening in Colombia, and I'm talking about all of the great things, but they didn't say this ecosystem took 10 years to develop, 10 years, and it was developed in the context of violence in Colombia.
Yeah,
so if you look at a city like Medellin, where people were being killed in the streets.
It was a scary place to be a few years ago.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Cali was known as Cartel Cali.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's where Colombia started with this. And what's been so interesting is that the people, private sector, creative industries, all came together and said, no, we're going to take back our country, and we are going to use creative arts in a really interesting way. And if you go to Medellin, and I hope that you guys get to do our own study tour to Medellin, you will see how creative industries, like there's the idea of transformative action, the idea of how architecture, how art can help transform a community, can help reduce violence in a community, can provide outlets for people. These are things that we can just first of all, absorb, because we have our own inner city issues, our own need for urban regeneration. But if you think about our starting point, we are not starting from that. Mm. We are starting from the point where we are having, we have 10 million visitors coming into the country annually. We have a ready access to market through our tourism product. We have a record number of cruise ship visitors. We have people who are already demanding more. We have proximity to the United States. We are one of the wealthiest countries per capita in the Caribbean, technically, right now. We have an enormous financial services sector. So we have, we are starting from a point of so much more. And so if Colombia can achieve that in 10 years, completely transform their economy, yeah, what can we do in two or three?
So I have a question, because I mean, like, I'm listening to you and there's a lot of like inspiration and hope for the development of the orange economy and people having access to these ecosystems. However, I am having a challenge visualizing what that ecosystem would look like here. I know you spoke about Disney, cruise, hospitality, and how they develop South Eleuthera. And what can you help me visualize what that would look like for the average creator? What were you taking what you got, not reinventing the wheel, and bringing it home, look like for a creator to give access to what they need to build their platforms?
So I think right now in the Bahamas, I think our ecosystem is very fragmented. We have a lot of the actors. So for example, you have public sector, you have the private sector, which are businesses, you have development banks, you have the entrepreneurs, and you have universities and, of course, investors and communities. And so what we have to do in our system is map out each of those entities, their existing mandates and resources, and try to align them into a singular direction of purpose. This is why we are still a very, very strong advocate of the project that we've been working on for some time now, Corner House. It's been completely finalized. We're currently in the financing phase for it. So hopefully we'll be at the Caribbean Investment Forum to see if we can get the about $5.5 million that we need. Wow. But where I see this going is, first of all, we need more market access points. So that means with Corner House, it's 350 MSMEs in the creative industry, essentially. So manufacturing, agri-processing, experiences, gastronomy, et cetera. That's one market access point. We're also articulating new programs specifically around capacity development. And we're going to call them capacity development because incubation, et cetera, is really organized around sort of learning. But in our new type of programming that we're going to do, we're going to build market access into the program itself. Because what's missing is a lot of these incubators, you do the training, and then you're left asking what is next. Right. And so then when we talk about building out market access, and for me, market access is a starting point, because market access is where people actually get sales, which is where they generate their historical financials to out to get additional financing. It's where contracts are built. It's making the creative industry really viable. So that's very important to me. And so what, in order to build out market access, who do we need to go to? Where are the touch points in our industry that critically support potentially sales? Mm-hmm. Because I'm still in Colombia, I have to come back and I have to have some meetings, but I already have a sense of who those actors are and how we can pull them in.
Yeah.
And another thing with Colombia, it's when you're engaging with those market actors, and most of them are in private sector, you're talking about big hospitality players. It's not just about saying, okay, we need you to sponsor us. It's about we need you to partner with us. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately what you are selling as a large hotel, you are selling people coming to this country. You want to see more stopovers. So we need to be in partnership to make the Bahamas as competitive as possible. And people are traveling on the basis now because they want authenticity, they want culture, they want creativity. So what you as a big hospitality player need to do is partner with those entities who can deliver that for you.
Wow.
And so by doing so, you benefit ultimately. So that's one point. also working with our partners, building out more of our own events and platforms. So I mentioned Bogota Fashion Week. Why we need to have our, we need to have events of scale that bring in persons from around the world. We, in the world is becoming more uncertain, but what is certain is that we need to diversify our trading partners. We need to diversify our sources of revenue. And so we have tremendous access through our partners in other development banks. You sign on to, we're a part of Afrexim Bank. We're part of CAF, which is the Development Bank of Latin America. And we can even go and plug into existing networks in Latin America. So, for example, one of the things that I would really like to see how we can figure out how to do is maybe bring some Bahamian creatives to Colombia, experience what they're doing here, and then plug into the infrastructure that they've already built for sales and marketing for their products in Europe and beyond. Absolutely. So we have, that's just one example. There are so many things that we can do. Even our chambers of commerce, we can have conversations with them and try to shift some of the local events that they do to more international events that we do.
Yeah.
Try to build out that market access, evolve the capacity development that we do. Because money is being spent in investment in entrepreneurship and in an ecosystem and an investment, but is it being spent effectively? And so what we really need to do is direct those resources towards coordination, market access, targeted capacity development, and leverage the connections that we have available to really leapfrog and accelerate what we're doing in the space.
Very encouraging, Samaya Cargo. Caller, we'll get you in a second. I love the examples that you gave, Fashion Week and music. Just a few years ago on this show, we had some folks on. This was pre-pandemic or right at the start of the pandemic. And I mentioned this, that the government, maybe we will see this with the new Ministry of Culture, but that the government needs to play a bigger role in exporting, especially musicians, and getting them exposed to other markets. And I got to tell you, at that time, the guests were not getting what I was saying. And hopefully attitudes have changed and we can see what's working in places like Colombia.
One of the pillars of the Orange Economy Unit is export. To get our creatives beyond our borders for that same market access that she spoke about. I don't know if you remember or if our listeners remembered that we had persons in from the International Trade Center in Geneva that came in, and we did research and we spoke with all of the creative industries to find out what their challenges are. And there has been a document produced for us to be able to apply best practices from other countries as well for the export of the creative industry. So we must get beyond our borders. And partnerships, I mean, is paramount. You know I believe in partnerships, and that's the only way.
Yeah, so Maya explained it. You've got the other development
maybe
banks.
Maybe if more of us are saying it, more people will believe that these partnerships are so necessary to make us, like she would say, leapfrog to that next level.
Can't leave it up to a music artist on his or her own or a fashion designer to be responsible for this. It's unfair, even, it seems. Let's take this call really quickly, and then we got a whole lot more to ask you about, both of you. Caller, good morning. You're live on Morning Blend Business. It's our spotlight on the Orange Economy series.
Good morning, Dwight, and good morning to your distinguished guest.
Hi, good morning. Good morning.
Right, for more than 20 years, we've been saying it, Ms. McKay. We've been taking groups all around the world, New Orleans, China, Canada, wherever. Nobody's listening, right? For the past 4.5 years, we've been agitating for the incorporation of the Entertainment Encouragement Cultural Heritage Act. Nobody's listening, only talking, a bunch of talk, and that's all. The young lady is absolutely correct. Unless we partner with the private sector and the public sector together and give the incentives to private sector to invest in the orange economy, we're going to be here 20 years from now saying the same thing we've been saying for the last 40 years. We got to get serious about the orange economy. It is a part, I dare say, it is the driving force behind tourism around the world. But when we come to the Bahamas, we allow the cruise ships to own the destination. We allow the cruise ships to own all of the entertainment. We allow the major resorts to own all the entertainment, as opposed to the people in the industry having ownership. we got to get serious. Mm. And until we get serious, we're going to be right here talking the same talk for the next 20 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Freddie. Hopefully that's not the case. All right, so Maya Cardo, I want to ask you about that. So incentives, do you... Are they going to be required? Are they doing that in Colombia, or does it feel more of an obligation to do as opposed to inducing folks to act? What are you seeing there?
So I would say that Colombia has a very unique history and a very unique background. And I do think that there are differences between cities. So you have some cities that are more naturally collaborative, and then some cities that are less collaborative. And so where private sector falls, public sector comes in. So in Cali, for example, there were sugar plantations there. So the population is 50% black, and the private sector has not been as supportive as developing the entrepreneurs as much as possible. And so what the mayoral offices there have done is invest in training and support through the Chamber of Commerce, through entities that's called like NIDO. And then they have those physical infrastructure, that critical infrastructure. So it's about finding a kind of balance. I also think that here in the Bahamas, it's not so much, based on our experience with Disney, it's not so much that they don't necessarily want to engage. It's who are the voices in the room that are actually being listened to.
Oh, boy.
So even us at the Development Bank, you know, we had Disney at first, in order to work with us, the local office is working with us, but their main office is like, why are you even working with the Development Bank? Like, they don't even understand what it is that we do.
Mm.
So who is having conversations with the major partners in industries? Who is convening this dialogue?
Wow.
Do they have the right voices? Mm-hmm. And that's something that came up. I was at an event hosted by Tourism Development Corporation and the UN. And even, you know, major stakeholders in tourism are saying, listen, like, we need to get some more innovative voices. We need to get a broader range of perspectives because, you know, you have people who are not experts in this field but are sitting in the position of experts. Oh. And I'm very encouraged by the work, you know.
Say that again.
That right there.
Whoa.
I'm very encouraged, though, because here we are having this conversation. You have Angelique at the Creative Council. You have, you know, the Prime Minister is really interested in arts and creative culture. You know, BDB is being empowered. And you have young people like me. You know, I'm just under 40, but I still consider myself young. I'm not patient. I'm not going to sit there and let you obstruct me.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to tell me, no, I don't want to do this because whatever reason that you have, it doesn't have to make sense. I'm like, okay, you close that door. I'm going to climb through a window because I believe in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that increasingly Bahamians are feeling that same level of frustration. And we've come to the point now where we are really ready to take our future in our own hands. In some instances, private sector and the creatives or the entrepreneurs came together without government.
Mm-hmm.
So they made those solutions themselves. And we can wait for government or we can wait for private sector. My thing is, you have to look at who's saying yes to you. Because even if 90 people are saying no, look at who's saying yes and build from there. And that's the approach that we're going to be taking.
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Let's take this call, and then we'll give people some list of things to do to make this happen. Let's take this call. Are you there, caller?
I am.
Turn
good
on
morning.
Your radio. Hi. Yes.
And good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I know it sounds a bit low, but I am a creative. I'm not a musician. I work straw craft along with other artisans. In my opinion, I have a thriving, authentic Bahamian boutique in New Providence. And not one person from the Ministry of Tourism, Development Bank, and I've sent out invitations, have ever walked into my store. I call that back, not the Ministry of Tourism, because working, I got onto their website, etc. And it's like Freddie said, we're going to continue to talk and talk. I had some people come into my store last year from Geneva, and they could not believe the work that they saw in my store. But I'm going to ask the Bahamians, where is her store located? And one of the people at the table know me. We must stop the talk. We must embrace our artisans, our creatives, all of them. Mm-hmm. And as Ms. Cargill said, you have inexperienced people at the table, and they're not bringing anything to the industry. We must stop politicizing our creative growth. We have people who have been in the industry, who have retired, but unfortunately, they are not the ones who have come back as consultants who can bring a wealth of knowledge to the industry. But I'm just going to say to the professionals around the table you're speaking to this morning, because I believe that they are, embrace every creative. There is so much that this country has that the blanket is covering.
Absolutely. Mm.
Take the blanket off and let the world see what you have.
Yeah.
Others are coming to us. They see our website, etc. People are coming off the cruise ship. They're bypassing others, and they're coming to our authentic Bahamian boutique. And as we go into this new era with this new government, let's stop politicizing our wealth of experience that we have, especially within New Providence.
Thank you.
That's
so
my
much.
Say. Everybody have a great day.
Yeah, really thank appreciate
you.
That.
Yeah,
thank you
thank
so
you
much.
For
and we
in.
And we need some clear definitions of what creatives are, because I think there's some things, as she said, some things getting left off the table as well. Regina, I don't know if you want to add anything to the conversation before we move on.
No, so I just wanted to say that, you know, I agree with the caller and with Sumaya. BDB is here to serve as that intermediary. We've seen in Eleuthera that, you know, it does require some hand-holding and some work, and so we're very intentional about what we set out to do, and our goal is to empower Bahamians as best as we can, whether through funding or through, you know, capacity development. And I think it's important to meet individuals where they're at, work with them, and then to be intentional about what you can deliver and what you want to deliver. And so our end goal remains the same. We're focused on market access development, and so we're willing to work, and we're not just here to talk. We are working, and so we invite persons to just reach out and contact us.
Okay.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, with in the midst of all of this hope, you hear maybe take the blanket off, or you hear things are being blocked, or not the right people are to the table. How can you circumvent initially having the government or other sectors involved and coming together as a unit for yourself and building these partnerships or relationships with international bodies, international other countries? And this is sad to say, which may then get the attention of your government. How possible is that? And is that a step that you would want to take in order to bring attention to this particular ministry? Anyone?
Well, I'll say this. BDB is a quasi-government entity. We are an instrument of policy. So it is the policy of the Bahamian government that arts and culture and creativity are something that they want to advance. And so as a policy instrument, they say the what, and we do that. We figure out the how, right? And so it's about, I think, leaning into that mandate and taking it on in real ownership to say, okay, this is what we want to do. How do we now play our part? And I think it begins
you know, with the individuals and with the entities themselves. It's about me and Regina as people saying, we are committed to this and we're going to keep working on this. And you have to be persistent in this space because there are a lot of, there are a lot of roadblocks. There's a lot of negativity. A lot of people, I honestly go into rooms sometimes and people look at me as if I'm a crazy person. but you just have to keep, you really have to keep going. And as a result of, you know, keeping that momentum, people do see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so this is why BDB is building these relationships now with the Inter-American Development Bank, now inviting us to do the study mission, because they see us as an entity that is going to help shape the ecosystem going forward, creating these direct connections. So we have a Rolodex of people that we can now tap into and lean on. And when I said, you know, I want to organize some study missions, I want to bring some people in to do master classes, they were like, yeah, definitely, we can do that. Again, with Finance in Common, which is the global grouping of all development banks in the world, that's another network that we can tap into. We can call up, you know, persons from Africa, from Latin America. We can call up the colleagues at the European Investment Bank. We already have the connections. It's about us now leveraging those connections in a way that makes sense and then targeting our resources. And so that means designing specific programs. So we, as you know, we are working very hard to execute the Cornerhouse Project, which is a really critical piece of infrastructure. And we are now developing new sets of programs to bring in this internationalization and focus on market access both domestically and abroad, because our programs, our philosophy now has solidified over the last couple of years into what I call market access and financing first, which you think about money in pocket. If your program doesn't generate money in pocket for the people who are taking part in that program, why are you even doing it?
Wow. We're running out of time. I want you to respond to this text really quickly, and then, like I say, want to let people know what they should be doing next. But this texter says here, the private sector needs to push this. As the conversation started, I said we really need to propel the economy if we could monetize a ministry of hopes and dreams, because that is what the government runs on, hopes and dreams. The goals need to be realistic. South Korea is a thriving orange economy, but they still have poverty because some people who enter the ecosystem fail. Some aren't prepared mentally for success. I mean, I think we're talking about something different there. So there are going to be people who resist it. Like I said, that conversation we had about 6 years ago on the show when I said the government needs to be part of this to propel, to promote these Bahamian art acts and stuff, they were like, no, that's not what the government should be used for. There's going to be a lot of resistance to this. What do you say to people who are like, no, this is a private sector thing. You got to do this on your own.
Partnerships. I mean, no one. You know, you need different pillars, just like you would need four corners held up to hold up a structure. No one.
Right. Can't just be private sector.
Yeah.
Can't just
so
be
it has
the government.
To be partnership.
Working together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So what's next? What should you do? You're listening to the show. You want to do more. You want to expand beyond this market. What do you do next? Sumaya, okay. Regina.
So for me, first of all, I want to say, based on where we are right now, you need to start with the man in the mirror. What can I do? What are my resources? What are my connections? What are my goals, right? And then connect with any of the existing business support agencies. Whether if you are confident that you're in a place that you need funding, come to BDB. But BDB is really set up for persons who are in a strong, you know, financial position, which means you have your historical records, you have really strong projections, you have really good cash flow. If you're not there yet, then you should go to Small Business Development Center, because they have resources that can help you strengthen your business. I would also recommend taking a survey of like what sector you're in and trying to see what market platforms already exist, and then trying to see whether or not you can connect with those market access platforms, whether that is a fashion show, whether that's just a gallery showing. You know, I see a lot of young artists now, like even someone from my own faith community now going to Italy, she literally started her studio in her backyard and it's doing amazing. So you have to take a look at your resources and really be strategic in how you move forward.
Yeah. Angelique, you got 15 seconds.
15 seconds. So our time is out.
Go on.
Yeah.
Angelique?
Well, I just want the creatives to continue to create, be inspired, you know, tap into any resource that you see available. Mm-hmm. You cannot run away from being creative. Mm-hmm. And the Orange Economy Unit is here to help us in the creative community get beyond our borders, because we understand what the climate is out there and that we need access to a wider community.
Yeah. Sumaya and Regina, how can we get more information from the Bahamas Development Bank, your contacts, and social media maybe, so folks can follow you all?
Yep, so give us a call, 702-5700. Send us an email at info@bdb.gov.bs, or you can send an email to my team directly, sdi@bdb.gov.bs. And, of course, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Okay. And Angelique McKay, Orange Economy Unit?
On social media, yeah.
Find out more there. Okay, great conversation. Thank you all so much
for
being here this morning. And keep us posted. Sumaya, hey, maybe we could take the whole show with you next time you go to Colombia. Let us know. But thank you all.
Awesome.
All right, we're going to take a very quick break, and then we got to come back to wrap things up. This is Morning Glen Business on Guardian Radio 96.9.
Hey folks, thanks for your patience. We'll be taking off very shortly. You should be wheels up in about 40 minutes. And due to a bumpy ride, snacks and beverage service has been suspended. AC has given us some trouble. Sorry, folks. And Wi-Fi is out. And so is the entertainment. Yeah, I'm sorry about the smell, folks. We are aware.
I know.
There's one more quick note. We are going to have to deplane.
Come on!
We're like the plane ride that isn't a nightmare. CG Atlantic Agents and Brokers. Good like that.
Planning for retirement can be overwhelming, but with CFAL, it doesn't have to be. We offer tailor-made individual group and pension solutions that take the guesswork out of retirement planning. Whether it's for you or your company, don't leave your future to chance and let the trusted hands of CFAL's experts guide you toward peace of mind and financial stability. Low upfront costs and affordable monthly payments make it easy for you to build wealth so you can live well. Visit us at CFAL.com to start on your path toward financial freedom. CFAL, growing wealth for future generations.
Southwest Plaza has so many stores, I've been trying to find a sensible way to list them all. There's CVS Bahamas, the Ashai Institute, BEMC Snack World, Bamboo Shack Bahamas, there, the Athlete's Foot, and BTC Games and More, John Bullfine, Threads Alive, Bahari, Dairy Queen, 700 Wines and Spirits, Sandy's, Clarkson Island Luck, Starbucks, and Lowe's Pharmacy, plus Marco's Pizza and Lorraine. Southwest Plaza, what a wide array of stores. Southwest Plaza, stop by today and explore.
It is time for your morning business report. The Grand Bahama Chamber of Commerce says that while recent investment announcements and redevelopment proposals have generated renewed optimism for Grand Bahama, the business community is still seeking meaningful stakeholder engagement and clearer timelines and visible progress on critical projects tied to the island's economic future. GBCC releasing those sentiments in a press statement responding to the government's 2026 speech from the throne, outlining plans tied to tourism redevelopment, maritime and logistics expansion, and more. Chamber President Ralph Hepburn saying that recent announcements and developments surrounding MSC, maritime activity, tourism redevelopment, and other proposed investments have been contributing factors to the renewed optimism, but that more information is needed. Read more about that in today's Guardian Business section. And former non-resident Bahamas ambassador to the Kingdom of Bahrain and the state of Kuwait and former director of Bank of the Bahamas, Duran Mackey, has been barred for 20 years by the Securities Commission of the Bahamas from engaging in any financial activity that requires the commission's oversight after admitting to misappropriating client funds while employed by IPG Family Office. The SCB saying in a statement released last week that the decision came into effect immediately According to the statement, while Mackey agreed to a settlement of the amounts misappropriated, he did not agree to the amount that was being alleged to have been removed. You can read more on that in today's Guardian Business section. In your Market Watch, recapping trading on the BSX from the last day of trading on Friday. Your market movers, Focal moving 2,360 shares, closing down 2 cents to 718. Consolidated Water up 5 cents to 588. Emir Incorporated up 7 cents to $13.02. The BSX All Share Index closing at 3,205.06, up 0.10. That's your Market Watch, and that is your Morning Business Report, brought to you by CFAL, growing wealth for future generations. Duquesa Dean, thank you so much for being here today.
I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
I'll see you again next week. Yeah. And I'll be back tomorrow with more Morning Blend and Morning Blend Business here on Guardian Radio 96.9. Dwight Strawn, have a great day, everybody. Stay tuned for On the Clock with Aaron Green coming up next.
If you're done with gas prices burning a hole through your wallet, stop paying the price and start driving the solution. A BYD EV from Easy Car Sales comes with an 80% drop in your fuel costs. So wave goodbye to gas lines and charge while you sleep. For 8 years, drivers like you have been breaking up with the pump and waking up to freedom. It's more than a car. It's a new way to be. It's a BYD from the one and only authorized dealer in the Bahamas. Visit easy242.com to learn more.
At CFAL, we understand that a secure future is the greatest gift you can give your employees. That's why our tailor-made group pension solutions are designed to fit the needs of both large and small companies. With CFAL, you can provide the retirement you and your employees deserve, ensuring peace of mind and financial stability for years to come. Join the many businesses that have already entrusted CFAL to create the right pension plan for their employees, and let us help you build a brighter future for your team. Visit us at CFAL.com to get started on building wealth so you can live well. CFAL, growing wealth for future generations.
CFAL is a proud sponsor of Team Bahamas for the 2026 CARIFTA Games.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.